Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining me as usual, Aki. How are you doing?
I'm super good.
What?
I've been drinking a lot.
Why?
It's my birthday.
Is it?
Oh, shit.
Yes.
Happy birthday.
Oh, shit.
I'm 33 now.
Like, today is your birthday?
Yeah.
Well,
you're
hot damn.
You're lucky I'm on.
Oh, hot damn. Well, Purnell's here. Purnell's hanging out because we can't fucking find Jacob.
Yeah, Jacob's fucking useless.
I love how you word it as like Purnell's hanging out as a consolation prize for Jacob.
Oh, no.
I prefer
Jacob's
Purnell over Jacob.
Yeah, everyone prefers you over Jacob. Don't worry about it.
Thank you.
But we have a super fun show lined up today. We have a bunch of guests joining us. The game Soundfall just ninja launched to all platforms. And from the dev team, Nate Horsfall, you're joining. You are lead animator, correct?
That's correct.
And musicians, we have Mr. Danimal Cannon joining us.
So,
how are you doing?
I'm great. I'm happy to be here.
And we have Stemage joining us, Mr. Grant Henry. How are you doing?
I'm good. Happy birthday, everybody.
Thank you. I have a question now.
Go ahead.
Horsfell? Soundfell?
You know it's so funny? I worked
is
in this
it named
game
after
for
you?
Almost 2 years, and I only made that connection a couple days ago, and somebody sent that.
That's amazing.
So it's not named after you, okay.
Nate Soundfall.
Nate Soundfall.
How many people is named after you now? It's only...
Yeah!
Own it.
Yeah, claim that bitch!
Oh, man.
It's the game.
So for the people who don't know what Soundfall is, Nate, give us the rundown. What is this game? Oh, what have you spent the past 2 years working on?
Okay, so Soundfall is a rhythm-based twin-stick shooter. It sounds complicated. Basically, it's the easiest way to think about it is it's like Smash TV versus Crypt of the NecroDancer. But in Crypt of the NecroDancer, you can't move off the beat. You can't do actions off the beat. So it was an amazing game. I always had a very difficult time playing it because of that reason. But with Soundfall, you can move freely and you can do things off the beat. You can do actions off the beat, but they'll just be weaker. However, it's also got a bunch of other stuff going on for it. It's a procedurally generated level system, so you never really know what each level is going to load into. We let you import your own music if you're on Steam.
That is awesome.
It's a 4-player online and local co-op game. And the online...
I have a question about
yeah.
that. Since you can upload your own songs and it's 4-player co-op, is the song shared between everybody, or
right.
do they all have their own music? Or
right. So the answer to that question is you can't do it online.
That's a
that
shame.
That would be horribly illegal. And
yeah, that makes sense.
Trust me, we tried. We tried real, real, real hard. But ultimately, the copyright holders would basically consider that streaming music. Like, I used to stream on Twitch when I was doing art stuff for fun, and I cannot count the number of times the people would hear me playing music and be like, oh wow, this band, this is awesome, who is this? And then I'd go back to watch the stream later and I got DMCA'd to hell and back. And so
that
would
right?
be horrible for a game like Soundfall, which requires the music to like make any sense at all what's happening. So
I'm just thinking of all the Japanese music I could upload to this.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can still play it locally. You can load in the music yourself, and you can play it with co-op with friends locally.
So you and your plushie could play.
Just a note on the Japanese fluffy. Music. We noticed recently that Japanese characters cause a little bit of an issue with the visual loading of the game. So
make them Rubanji then. Okay.
Yeah, that's simple enough. We'll have a fix for that. But yeah. Let's see. It's got a full story mode, surprisingly, after all of this. And Yeah, it's good. And even with you don't load your own music in, there are 140 something songs about with as many genres.
140? Holy yeah, that's shit. Nice.
And with as many genres.
Because that implies that even if you can't upload your own music, unless you just happen to somehow miraculously hate most of the music, you're going to have jams for days. You won't get bored.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, I was watching people stream this game yesterday, and generally speaking, everybody was really enjoying any of the music that was in there. Like, the main first level is, first area is pop music, and pop music, even for me, is not really my thing. But we tried to find stuff to mix it up to make it at least interesting, but then it's like, oh, that goes from that to, like, jazz and ska. Goes into orchestral. There's an entire metal biome. There's an entire
new craft
biome.
That just answered a quick question I was going to have at one point too, which was, I was thinking this was going to be one of those games like Bit Ribbon was, where any track worked in any place in the game and it just did a thing. But in this game, the levels are tailored around genres, or is it just how the pre-upload is?
So the way the levels work. As far as the story mode and all that kind of stuff is that they are tailored pre-genre. In theory, they're also supposed to work when you import your song. It's supposed to be able to detect, oh, this is a metal song, put it in the volcano biome. And it does a decent job doing that, but it's not a perfect system. So sometimes it doesn't know, like, oh, this is metal, but it also has, like, this crazy synth track. So maybe it'll put it somewhere else. But, like, it's just kind of it does its best.
Two questions.
It tries real hard. Yeah.
What happens if I only upload metal music? Would it go into all the levels, or would it would just pick random songs for the volcano biome?
It'll probably just try to give you the volcano biome over and over and over and over again. Yeah.
I'm fine with that. Second question. You said you can upload the songs on the Steam version.
Correct.
Xbox can get music on it, can't it, Joe?
Well, I don't know how it works on the consoles. I know there is another game called Music Racer Ultimate that works by, like, going to a directory online or having a local web server that it can access, but I don't think there's a way to actually, like, rip music to an Xbox. So,
oh,
yeah,
it was.
And also, again, like, just legally speaking, the console people, they just don't let you do it. Again, we tried really hard to get a lot of this stuff to happen, but, like, consoles basically don't allow it, and then they all have weirdness about them.
I'm wondering how that Music Racer game got around that then.
Going through the console?
I'm sure there's some way to do it, right? Like, even some people were asking about, like, oh, dude, can you integrate Spotify? And again, it's like, no, because, like, some people licensing. Have done that, but, yeah, licensing.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
So look who finally showed the fuck up. Jacob's here.
Why did you bring that up?
Hi, Jacob.
He would have eventually talked. People would have known he was here. It would have been fun.
Yeah, I had to address the elephant in the room, which is me. I'm an elephant. I'm fat.
An elephant never forgets a friend.
Oh, I forget a lot, so I guess I'm not an elephant. I'm just a jackass.
Don't forget your friends. Don't forget your friends. That's the point.
So, yeah. Nate, you're talking about all this music. You said there's 140 tracks in the game. Who are some of the musicians you called up?
Oh, well, I think we got some of them in this call. Maybe. Does that sound right? I think we got Stemmage in here. Grant Henry. You did.
I know him.
I did half the music and Dan will do the other half.
Oh, it's
I would still buy the fuck out of it if it was just you two doing the soundtrack. I told Noodle Cake, I saw them in a stream, and I was like, I want Stemmage DLC pack of the album Narrowband.
Oh, Joe, God. My hero.
I know.
Love that.
I love Narrowband.
He's so good. But yeah, we got Grant in here. He did unfortunately only one song, but he did a really good one. Danimal, you got three in there, right? I think.
So four? I have a question for you, Nate. And maybe you don't know the answer to this.
I know the answer.
So in like 2016 or so, I'm pretty sure some of the devs licensed songs from me for like when the game was something else. So they actually have like two or three of my tracks in there that they licensed forever ago. And then I did three new ones on top of that.
Wow.
Yep. That's true. We have Danimal Across America and Parallel Processing as the licensed ones. And so one of the co-founders of the company is this guy named Nick Cooper, and he's actually a hardcore MAGFest guy who's been going to MAGFest way before even this game existed. He used to work at Epic Games. He was one of the guys that kind of created what became the mega behemoth that is Fortnite. But he loves MAGFest. He loves all the musicians. So whenever they were doing their demos and stuff like that, like, he absolutely was like, oh my fucking God, need to get Danimal. I think he told me a story. I believe it was yesterday. He was talking about like one of the first time he saw Dan play at MAGFest. He was just like, after that, anytime that he was there, any friends or anything that were around, he was like, yo, you're going to this show. I don't fucking care what you're doing. You're coming with me. This is what's up. So Nick, even before I got on the project, had already reached out to a handful of people that are MAGFest folks. And then I kind of filled in the list of it. So I have people that ask me this question a lot. So I wrote a list recently, and some people you guys might know are Viking Guitar, Tiberian Sons, Frank Klepacki, IQ, Kay Murdoch, who plays with Megaran, Jay Kim, who goes by the moniker Ronin OPF, Sonic Buster, Mason Lieberman, Zoc, who is a real deep cut from the VGM space, unlike the Shiz. And,
I didn't know Zoc was on this. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Cody Carpenter, who played with Vince DiCola and also has his entire, if you're not familiar with this guy, he's the son of John Carpenter, but is he basically a prog, like, monster?
Oh, wow. What?
Yeah.
Wait, you're not joking about the son of John Carpenter.
I'm not. No.
That is random.
No, it's really important that I emphasize how much of an absolute monster of a musician he is on his own.
The
son of John Carpenter is always a wait, what?
Yeah, that's more like a random like trivia factoid than anything.
Yeah, dude. And Grant, I think you knew about him way before I did, because we were driving down to play with these guys. Grant wasn't there to play with them, but there to hang out, because he's in Vince DiCola's little live band. And Grant was like, yo, have you actually heard his original music? And it's like, no, he's a complete prog monster, which is funny, because his dad doesn't like prog at all.
Cody doesn't like horror movies and is sick of being asked to do them. And then Cody's dad doesn't like prog, which I think is hilarious. So,
that is amazing.
Also, we were sitting there before we had a chance to talk to him. He was doing his sound check on his instruments, and he totally just whipped out Castlevania to like warm up on his keys. And we were like, he's one of us.
Yeah, dude, so I'll take it even further. Cody bought the hard copy of Contra Rocked and Loaded. He has a hard copy of that album. Like,
that record smokes.
When I heard that Castlevania thing, I was like, wait. So I went over to him and I started talking to him about it, and he had that, and he also had the Spectrum Mana album, which I think was the last time I was on the show, probably.
I think it's been way too long.
Yeah.
It's been way too long for all you guys. We have so many guests on the show now that it's hard to get the friends on, but I figure with this game coming, Grant was coming on anyway. He's doing a review later on in the show, but I figured I would reach out and see who else wanted to come on and chat about this game, and I'm glad that you and Dan, you both decided to come on and hang out with us.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate it.
How did you get involved with the game? You said that some of the music was there before you. How did you get pulled into it?
So that's a really funny story, because I met Nick many years ago in Asheville at a Metroid Metal show.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Dan, do you know this?
No.
At that Asheville show.
It was a show we played like downstairs. It was the one where Elliot from 8-Bit Disaster played sax, and we opened for Bit Brigade. One of those comic book ones. And Nick, I thought you knew this, and Nick and one of his buddies from Epic drove out from Raleigh to see us.
You know, I probably met them.
You certainly did. Yeah, yeah.
Because I think ago. I played two sets that night. And so I was probably just slinging merch and being like, "Oh, nice to meet you, dude."
Want to make a game in a few years or something?
Yeah. No, but here's the thing, though, is like that happens to me all the time, and I don't mean to say that in like a crappy way. Like, I think my music has been used on like, I don't know, maybe 100 like student games and I don't know 50 indie games that never came out or something like that. Like, it's I get told that, you know, for, like, "Hey, I want to make music with your game," and I go, "Cool." I mean, I'm genuinely think it's very cool, but it's just funny that like I don't usually remember it. It's years later.
Yeah, this is funny. This is like last summer, me and Daniel were talking because it was time to start actually working on tracks for this game. And I was like, "Do you have songs in this game, right?" And you're like, or I don't know, something like, "I think so. I'm not 100%. I mean, I think from before, but now there's going to be other ones." I mean, it was sort of it was a reminder. Also, you're doing new stuff too. That whole thing was just kind of funny. It was like leftover from a conversation you had probably a year earlier.
I'm going to search my email right now. I am curious of when they actually licensed those tracks from me.
I mean, it has to be at minimum 2018, because that's what they were doing. They were doing MAGFest demos. I forgot to mention this.
They were
down in the indie MAGFest space, constantly winning best of show every year that they were there.
How did I miss this game at MAGFest?
Well, you know, MAGFest, particularly the indie space, is like this like labyrinth snaking thing where you're like, oops, did I not go into that corner? Oh, I missed the greatest game that was there.
And it's gotten so big too.
Yeah. So I met Nick there and we were talking, and I just got there because a buddy of mine who I used to play Unreal Tournament 2004 relentlessly with back in the day was like, "Oh man, you got to go meet my friend who's going to be there." And when I was just chatting with him, first of all, this anybody who's going to come up to a Metroid Metal show is already like pretty fucking cool in my eyes. So that was already pretty good. But then we're talking more and he's like, "Oh yeah, man, have you ever heard of this album called Spectrum of Mana?" And I literally had copies of it in my backpack because I was having it at the show. And I'm like, and I just kind of brought it out of my backpack. And so basically after that, we became good friends. And then, you know, I told him, "If you ever need animation help, just let me know." So fast forward to 2020, the animator that they were using previously, who did a really good job getting through their prototype, wanted to do his own thing. And in fact, he's got this crazy indie game that he's working on right now. It's all 2D. The 2D brutal, like violent Metroidvania called Cookie Cutter, about a psycho android robot who just goes around murdering basically everyone.
I am looking cookies? This the fuck up. That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, doesn't it actually involve cookies?
No. I think the deal with it is like the android was originally like a cook or something like that, because she looks like some sort of super southern diner mom kind of look. But then her face gets ripped off and you see it's like the Terminator looking thing kind of thing. Her attacks, like her ultimate attacks, basically rip her flesh off, and then it turns into like a crazy ass chainsaw and all kinds of stuff. It's very over the top. But he's doing that thing right now, and so they reached out to me in August of 2020, and I've been like kind of hoping to be a part of this game for forever. So of course I was immediately on board, and then due to circumstances that involve game development, and you know, game development's a sticky, messy space. Eventually, I ended up redoing literally everything in the whole game. So,
oh wow,
I'm not the lead animator; I'm the only animator on the entire.
Jesus.
So,
yeah, I had no clue that so many of my friends were involved with this thing until I saw your post on Facebook, and I'm like, holy shit!
Yeah.
I know people.
Yeah, I tried to get as many as I could. I didn't even get through the list earlier. Like, Super Guitar Bros are also in it. Like, nice. near the end of development, I would say, maybe last summer, and which wasn't the end of development, but it was originally supposed to be the end of development. We were needing some songs for biomes, because earlier it was asked like, "Oh, is it specific to music?" So we needed some stuff for the desert biome, for example. And it's like, well, what is that? It's like acoustic kind of worldly music. And I was like, oh dude, I'm absolutely going to get Super Guitar Bros. And they were pumped to be in there. They actually have, they have two songs as the Super Guitar Bros, but also Sam and Steve did songs individually. And then they played on each other's songs. And so that's cool because it's their own flair. Let's see who else I got. I got Tom Martizan, who worked, he's worked on a bunch of different stuff in the space, but I think his moniker right now is Mega Neko, I think is who he is. And then Danimal. And then there's a whole bunch of other people that I did not have any hand in, but are absolutely kick-ass people like Toriana and Mikiku and a whole bunch
of people. I love Toriana, by the way.
Oh, so you do. So you're familiar with that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She's fantastic.
She's in here. Yeah.
So yeah. I found some stuff. Nice. Just to give you a timeline on how games work. So the first email I got from Nick asking to license music from me was in August of 2016, so about 6 years ago. And they in the email, they're like, oh, well, we hope to have a trailer in about 6 months. Well, 6 years later, whatever.
Close. It is close.
It was close. Yeah, just move over a decimal point. It's not base 10, but don't worry about it.
Yeah, right.
Which actually is kind of, that tracks, because in 2014, I played, I think it was 2014, I played a show at GDC called Pow Pow Pow, and I had a game developer after that show be like, oh my god, I want to make a game, you know, based around your music. And anyways, that didn't come out till 2018. And it just takes 4 to 6 years to like make a game and do it right.
Yeah. I mean, I could literally take multiple shows to talk about the sheer volume of game development issues that this thing went into. But essentially games are hard and things happen.
The cool thing is you actually got it out and it's available for people to play there. Yeah, I have some friends who started working on a game 9 years ago and it's still not out.
Oh dude. I mean, I've always wanted to do my own game, and quite frankly, I'm terrified of ever trying it because I know how much work is required. Like, Soundfall was a Kickstarter game, and then it was also, and then it was more like a fig game instead, and then it disappeared for a while, and then it had a publisher for a while, and then something else happened, this publisher changed around, and like, yeah, it's anybody who gets a game out is basically like, they deserve kudos just for doing that.
Well, I have some questions about the game.
Well, gotta give a quick kudos to Noodle Cake Games. They just popped up in chat. So, howdy to Noodle Cake.
Hey, what's up, Noodle Cake?
You have a great name. Just want to point that out.
That is a good name. All right, Aki, what are your questions?
They've been publishing great games for a long time, like mostly mobile early on. And
huge thanks to Noodle Cake.
Big shout to Noodle Cake.
Yeah, they supported us through the whole thing. So huge support for them. And I think somebody else who said he was joining, there's a guy in the channel right now called That Santori Guy, and that is our character rigging person who little minor development story. He had to overhaul the entire animation pipeline with me about a year ago, and pretty much saved the project in my opinion. So
wow,
I love
awesome.
That
guy. Thank you. That's great.
Yeah, I love him.
All right, Aki, what were your questions?
I was wondering, do you guys have any accessibility features in the game at all?
As far as like colorblind features and stuff like that?
Well, not only that, but I watched the trailer. I haven't played the game myself. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, unfortunately, a surprise launched, and I had like no clue it was coming. So, like, I haven't even gotten to play the game yet. I'm buying it tomorrow when we get our paycheck.
Yep. No, we couldn't even tell. Like, we couldn't tell anybody about it. It's so secretive
because of the Nintendo Direct just being part of that on the stealth launch.
Yep, they're very aggressive about those things. You cannot.
NDAs are fun.
You cannot say anything.
Yeah, I don't have my music out yet. I didn't know the game was coming out.
I know, man. Sorry.
It's fine.
Sworn to secrecy. But
I know I saw some of the fighting stuff in it.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of very bright neon colors that go flying every which way very quickly.
Sure.
I was wondering if there was anything you guys had put in to maybe lower the intensity of that stuff to make it a little easier for individuals who have, you know, photophobic seizures, or that's not the right word. Whatever the right word is. Yes, that photosensitive seizures. There we go. Yeah. If you had any intensity options for stuff like that in the game or anything?
The only thing that we really have as far as that is you can turn off the camera shake, which is, the camera shake can be pretty extreme, so that helps.
Oh, that's good.
Turning off the actual effects and stuff like that would probably be a lot more work as far as, like, as far as disabling all those things. But, you know, if people want it, you know, we're very open to feedback about everything, and so
I want it.
Yeah. Do you fear that it might be too much, too intense for you to play?
Yeah, just because of how much I saw some of the fights in there, and there was a whole bunch going every which way real quick. It was like, I don't know if that'd be good for me to play.
Sure.
I mean, it's super cute looking though. Yeah. I saw that trailer. I was like, oh my god, this is so cute looking. I love the main character's design, the woman character. I don't know if there's more than one. I only saw her in the... There are five.
Shout outs to the designer of that character, who is Nicholas Cole, who also was the guy who worked on Spyro remaster redesigns and also Crash 4.
Nice. They look fantastic. I love all the designs in it.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah. But no, we definitely are open to you know, whatever we can do to help with getting more people to be able to play the game, for sure. We had not personally encountered anybody truly having a hard time playing it, but I could certainly say that, you know, we don't have everybody out there who's going to be able to comment on it, right? So it's very possible that, you know, for yourself, maybe it would cause problems, and I would feel horrible if that was the case. There's nothing that, like,
I'd still review it happily. I'm just saying.
Yeah. There's nothing that, like, flashes like crazy or anything like that. It's mostly just, like, colorful explosions and stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
I will say, as somebody who's played the game a little bit, some of the sequences in the trailer are more dynamic than you might see in, like, a single player mode. I think, like, a lot of the real chaos is when you have, like, four players on screen and stuff like that.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't be able to play. I saw some of the four player one and I was like, no, I can't play with other people. That's too much. That's way too much going on at once.
Yeah, it gets so the four player mode too, once the way the game works, there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes, but one of the things is every time you add another player, it adds more enemies, at least.
Oh.
And so if you keep adding more players, you get more enemies on the screen. And if you play on the harder difficulties, you get even more enemies on the screen, and it can get insane.
It becomes a bullet hell.
Yeah, okay. Oh, absolutely.
There you go, Scott.
Yeah, some of the gameplay I saw. I was watching one of the PR people play it last night, and she was just, it was straight up bullet hell with how many projectiles were flying everywhere, and they had three people going, so there were enemies every. It was intense, and that was only on World 4.
Yeah, we.
That reminds me too. I wanted to ask in regards to the whole, like, how the bullets work and the guns work on it, because while we did talk on this chat about, you know, it's all to the music and such like that, how, like, is it a matter of, like, you get, like, point, like, damage bonuses by attacking on the rhythm and dodging to the rhythm, or, like, what is the flow there?
Yes, you get damage boosts for attacking on beat, and dodging. If you dodge on beat, you get invincibility frames for a few. And so, per the bullet hell thing you were talking about, the only way to survive that literally is to dodge on the beat and dodge through the bullets. There's no other way. And to give you an idea of how completely stupid the bullet hell can get, pretty much near the end, we had to do a performance tweak because there were so many bullets on the game that it would basically, like, log my computer down. And I have a RTX 3090, so it was a lot of bullets.
That is a lot of bullets.
More?
This is definitely a game for Scotty, then. That's, yeah.
Did you have issues getting it to run on the Switch or on any of the other I know Xbox One and PS4 are both getting older. Did they have any issues running it?
Switch, absolutely. Switch is hard capped at 30 FPS. Like, you just can't. One of the developers mentioned today, I didn't even know this, but apparently just in general, Unreal Engine doesn't really run more than 30 FPS on the Switch, just across the board. We had an absolutely stellar team of people who made that platforming stuff happen. Ben Ziegler and Andrew Huckluck in particular, who just, that was basically their only job, was to like make it run on these platforms. And,
so you employ wizards.
Yeah. I mean, we doing a multi-platform launch like this is generally not a good idea. And, you know, for all we know, it still won't be. Who knows? But it's a lot of work. And every time that you're doing that, like, oh, you're having Switch development, well, you're taking that person away from doing other development then. Like, they're on the Switch now. And, like, see you later. They're going to disappear for the next couple of months. So that can seriously impact how much the rest of the game could be polished, because that's what's going on. But Ben, especially near the end, was like our performance guy. So if anyone's happy about how things run, Ben and Andrew, for sure, they deserve all the credit for that.
As a person who purchased it on the Switch, I am preemptively thanking them for their hard work.
Awesome.
Jacob, did you get a chance to look up at the game at all? Did you have any questions about Soundfall?
I did not.
No. You penis. You've been sitting quietly for 30 minutes. You could have looked up a trailer.
You could even just say, how long is the trailer for the game? Just
something. Is it on Stadia? I see it's someone on chat. No, it's not on Stadia. Wait, is Stadia still a thing? No.
I don't know. Is Stadia still? I thought they were scrapping that. I don't know.
I figured you'd get a port to that after the Virtual Boy, personally.
Oh, dude. Yeah.
I was going to say. Oh, go ahead, Grant.
Oh, no, I was just saying, I'm envisioning the latency control. You'd have to hack in there to get it to work on Stadia.
It's pretty funny if you put it on the lowest settings. It kind of looks like a PS2 game because it's so like blocky.
Retro. Dan, I was going to ask you, between this and Just Shapes and Beats, you're getting pretty involved with things that involve dodging a lot.
I mean, that's cool. Here's the thing is, with Just Shapes and Beats and this game as well, like, the fact that people like hear my tunes and are like, oh, let's make a game. I want to use this in a game where like music is the focal point. Like one of the AAA PS3 to PS4 era like issues in sort of like game audio was music was becoming more of a background element. You know, you were supposed to serve the ambiance of the scene. But I, you know, grew up where music was essentially a foreground element. And a lot of the people who were, you know, making these games where music is like a part of the gameplay, like an integral part of the game, they also grew up with, you know, like listening to Castlevania tunes be just as loud as the sound effects or anything else. Like, that's integral part of the experience, and they understand what it brings to the game. Additionally, I can tell just from the fans from Just Shapes and Beats, like, if people experience your music like in a way that is like synergistic with this, I don't know, other sort of medium that they're going through, it really forms like a connection, and you kind of have a fan for life. Like, the tracks of mine that are on YouTube that are in Just Shapes and Beats have like 100 times more views than the tracks of mine that aren't in that game.
Oh, wow.
And they just constantly get comments about how good they are. And they're not my best tracks. Like, I mean, maybe they are.
That's the shit I didn't want to deal with.
Yeah, honestly, that sort of thing, I feel like that's been like how music games have worked for a long time in their own right, too. Because I can't speak for everybody, but like, I've been playing like a lot of the dance games and guitar games and button mashing games for ages, and songs that I probably would have never gotten into otherwise became absolute favorites specifically because I experienced them within that gameplay experience.
100%.
This
game too.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, we all love video games and video game music, but when you play the game a whole hell of a lot, have any of you guys ever decided to mute it and put on, like, a different soundtrack?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. All the games were, like, a lot of games we have to redo same levels over and over.
Yeah. So, like, I absolutely love when you do that, and then what me and my brother always called it accidental sync, like you're doing something. My favorite is for this is Ikaruga and the band Chimera. Right.
Oh God.
And like you're going through the game and you blow up the boss and then the singer's like, like it's just so good. And so a game like Soundfall is to me, when I heard about it, was just like, oh my God, like that's the closest thing to what I used to do as a kid all the time. And you still see it, like watching people stream it, or even when you're playing it, you'll be doing something and then maybe there might be like, you know, maybe the singer screams, or maybe there's a drop, and then maybe right on that drop you took down that boss, or you jumped or you dodged, and it just feels so good.
I love when that stuff happens in games. It doesn't happen enough, because I don't think enough games have soundtracks that really stand out that way. Like, it feels like too many games nowadays just have background music, and there's nothing that really stands out in a lot of games. And I guess with 140 tracks in the game, you got to find stuff that stands out.
Yeah, like, so with the rest of the 140, like, I listed a bunch of people. I'd say maybe, if I had to take a guess, 30% of those are people that we reached out to and licensed. Some of which are original, some of which are ones that we just said, hey, we love your stuff, can we license one of your things? Like Frank Klepacki, for example, he got a bunch of his songs. He didn't need to make original ones for us. He already has like a decade of kick-ass music that you can just go online. The dude makes an album literally every year, by the way, in case you don't know that.
That's ridiculous.
He's amazing. But
I wish I could do that.
I know, right? I wish, dude, it's insane. But the rest of the music comes from this library called Epidemic Sound. You guys familiar with that?
No.
I'm not.
Okay, so if you go onto YouTube, people like have like background music in their clips and stuff like that. Like Danimal, you're a Rocket League guy, so you probably watch a bunch of these Rocket League videos. I have definitely seen people playing these Rocket League videos, and in the background, they're definitely using the same songs that we have in our game.
Because they're cleared for, streaming and stuff like that.
Cleared for streaming. And so Epidemic Sound is this gigantic library of music, and one of the other things that I did in this game was near the end of the project I found out that I Nick could use a little bit of an extra help curating these songs, and you know, I love doing that. I made two albums where that's pretty much all I did, so I spent an entire week just going through all of Epidemic Sound's libraries, digging for literally hours, like, and I found this one song in the pop for the pop area where this lady has a lyric called, she says, "Spin for me." And the ultimate that Melody does is this sword spinning attack. And when you earn the sword in this area, it's the very first time you've ever experienced it. And it's one of those things where it's like, if you time it just right, you trigger your ultimate for the first time ever when the lady says, "Spin for me." And people have already commented about how like that was a euphoric experience for them. And it's the same thing. It's just, it's sort of accidental sync, but it was also intentional in this case because we stumbled over it and it was like, holy shit, this must be in this temple. Like, this is where this is going.
That's so cool.
Happy accidents like that, right?
Yeah, man. Oh, so good. And then there's other ones like, I mean, like Frank and the Tiberian Sons have a song on this new EP that's going to be coming out soon called Gunmetal. And the moment I heard it, I was like, well, this is definitely the end of this biome. Like, there's just no question. And I feel like certain songs, I feel like this in albums in general, certain songs are definitely openers. Certain songs are definitely closers. Certain songs are definitely kind of like middle. And not to say that any of them are better or worse, but it just feels like, yeah, that should be this ending of this one. Dan has a song that was like, oh, is it? It's very synthy, but it's also really heavy. And so we decided to put it, we have these levels that show up later in the game. called Warps. We straight up stole it from Mario, Mario World. And the idea is to, are you getting bored with the music in this biome? Well, that's okay. Here's another biome over here. Go check this out. And so it's like, it still sort of straddles the line between, yeah, here's this synth biome, but also here's this chiptune biome. And it's like, oh, well, Dan's music is definitely going in this warp. Like, that's where that's going.
Oh, that's cool. I haven't gotten to that part yet. So yeah. I'm excited to try that out.
Yeah.
I will say one thing. So Grant and I was, we were asked to create some songs fairly late in the development process. And I guess we had the benefit of hindsight where we could sort of talk with Nate and the other developers where, you know, they say, hey, we want you to make some songs. And we have these mechanics based around music and stuff like that. And we really kind of grilled them and were like, all right, well, what works well with, you know, what musical devices work well with the mechanics that you're using in the game? And they had some sort of like basic guidelines, but like it really helped to sort of like see footage of like how the game interacts with music and stuff like that. And so we sort of kind of custom tailored some of our new tracks like around that idea of things that would play well with the game.
You had notes about like what is considered an easy tempo versus a really difficult tempo, like the max you should, the fastest you should make your song. The animations are all in beat with the music. So if you do like a 180 BPM song, the freaking Nate's animations, all the enemies are just bugging out, banging their heads, you know? So that, well, yeah, that was actually a really helpful thing. So I would just like listen and think like, I want to bob my head. What is my personal head bob preferred speed? And then wrote a song with a kick drum on every one of those hits for yes. 5 minutes. And it was you're right, that was fun. We did come late, didn't we? I guess
yeah.
That was like,
yeah, real late
later on. So
yeah, it was one of those things. If we ever get to do this again, one of the things that I would love to do, which I at the very end it was like, oh my god, I could have been doing this the whole time, what the fuck, is because you can import your own music. They could have been giving me work in progresses, and I just load it into the game, and then I send them a video and be like, here's what it looks like, is what it is, and they're like, oh, okay. And then you're like, you can make adjustments. This I did manage to do this with Stupid Guitar Bros, actually. Oh, this is a great story. So I was hanging out with them on Discord, and they played me their song. This was right before MAGFest of this year. They played me their song, which is a work in progress, just live, and I recorded it with OBS live. And then I took it and I brought it into the game and I recorded myself playing it. And then I sent it back to them and I said, see, you see how I'm having a hard time hitting some of these beats? Because there were parts in their song, you know, with music, you want to have like dynamics, right? You want to be like, okay, this part's going to be quiet. And it's like, well, maybe, but at least like, so for example, with Steve, he had a part where the beat like almost entirely dropped out for a while. And I was like, look, just put in like a percussive, like chick, 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 like really quiet, but just give me something there so I can have something to feel. And when he saw it and he saw me struggling, he was like, oh, I get it. And it made a better song immediately. And then he did that. They redid the video. I re-put it in the game and I sent it back to them. And this was over the course of like an hour. And that was it. Like,
it's ridiculous how fast shit can happen these days.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Like, this entire game was made remotely on Discord. There is no office. And even before the pandemic, there was no office. Some people are in, our music composer / sound designer is in France, I believe. And we had a bunch of other concept artists and environment artists and G-Factory that are in Europe. And they're all just, everybody's all over the place. I'm in California, the main developer, Nick and a bunch of other guys are in North Carolina. And when we were testing the game constantly, like, we played it over the internet. So I can speak to the netcode of the game is very solid. I can't say that it'll solve your bad ISP problems. If you have a low connection, it's not going to be great, you know, but like, we got it about as good as it can get. I mean, I was floored at how good it is, because a game if it has any latency problems, you can't play it.
No.
Right.
Like, we were talking about being able to do remote play, and Ben Ziegler determined that it just made it too unplayable for that because of the latency problem. So we can't do that, unfortunately, but like the rest of it works pretty damn solid.
Nice. I know we've been chatting about the game for a while. Does anyone else have any questions?
I mean, we just need to boot it up.
Play that shit.
I don't think.
Oh, I'm going. I'm ready.
I do want to say one little anecdote, just from my own perspective. So, I think it was in October of last year or so. You know, Nick was like, "Hey, we need some new tracks, you know, from you for this game." And he was like, "Oh, we want you to do the final boss track." And which is, you know, great. I love doing boss track.
And he crushed it, by the way.
Well, the thing is like, this is a game about music. This is a game, like, with 140 tracks. It's, you know, music, it's almost like, I don't know, maybe about the power of music and a world of music. And it's sort of like, all right, well, you have to do the final boss of that. Like, so I felt a little bit like, well, you better crush it. Because, like, you can't have a track that's, like, kind of lame as the climax of the game. And I was actually really happy with what I ended up coming up with. I had pretty much wrote, like, the most absurdly dramatic track I've ever written. And I was kind of going back and forth with Nate because he was animating the boss.
I was literally animating it while he was writing it.
Yeah, and so I was like sending him my work in progress stuff as I was working on it. But
which song is that? We could play that at the end of the episode.
It's called Discordance, and it's not available for sale yet. It will be later next week, but I did send it to you, and
it's amazing.
Oh, thank you. You listened World to it? Premiere
on the yes, I listened to it before the show. All three tracks are fantastic. I think Discordance is my favorite.
Oh, well, good. Got it.
I think Discordance is like all of your, I said this before, like all of the styles you've been playing around with over the years in like one track. Because it's got like, it's got the really heavy chip-ish kind of like grind to it, but also orchestral stuff and also fucking metal. Like it's everything.
It's like Danimal is the boss.
Yeah.
Danimal is the boss of the game, confirmed.
I guess I do have a question now.
Huh. All right.
So, I mean, the game sounds fairly massive. You got a ridiculously large roster of tracks playing through it. And from reviews, it sounds like it's quite the success already. But whenever someone produces or creates something, there's always that thing they wish they did more of. At least that's what I hear. I usually just encroach on other creations. But as people who released a quality product, can you think of anything that you still kind of wish you could have gotten there, or would be something you try to slip into a sequel?
Oh my God. I mean, I literally have a book of things to that answer. Like, this game is not like we could have done a lot more and we have so many ideas. Like, it just so many ideas. I'll give you one that Nick was kicking around for a while. Nick wanted to do like a survival mode where it just loads track after track after track in these arenas that we have, and you just go until you die.
That would be cool.
Yeah. Like Jukebox Crawler.
Arena mode DLC confirmed.
I mean, we have DLC in mind, but it's entirely dependent on the success of the game, and it's also really hard to know how successful it will be. Like, we have really great reviews right now, and that's fantastic, but that doesn't necessarily translate into sales. No. My always go to is like Okami is one of my favorite games of all time, and
that was a tragic one.
That game just tanks on every system that it sells on. I don't know why. I think it's incredible.
Is that the one with the wolf in painting?
Yes.
I've always wanted to play that. I've still never played that.
So you just have to play it, right?
So like that. Well, it requires me to buy it is the issue, and I have a tendency to spend my money on other things
quickly. Right? So like everybody's like, oh, that game sounded cool, or that looked cool, but like, oh, I never got there, and it's like, God, I don't know. So, you know, who knows where Soundfall will fall, you know, we're gonna keep plugging it as much as we can, and if people like it, we are completely ready to expand upon it as much as we have. We have a bunch of, we literally have certain things that we created and then had to cut because we just, it would have taken too long to get it rolling. And there's a lot of them.
Are those DLC ideas or is it just strictly music for DLC possibilities?
Oh no, oh no, no, no. All of the above. Like music is actually the easiest thing to add because since the game generates everything based on the music, you can infinitely just keep adding songs to it. That's like, it's like nothing. But no, we, you know, tons more stuff that we have to basically just kind of waiting in the wings. And if we're given the go, like if it blows the doors off, then it's like, all right, let's do this, you know?
I have an amusing question. Just, I like breaking games. It's one of the things I do. What would happen if someone loaded up a song that was like 5 minutes long, but only had like two notes in the entire thing? How easy would that level be?
You know, I've never tried that. I don't know what would happen. If it was 5 minutes with only two notes, I feel like, I don't think it would be easy because you wouldn't be able to be on beat like ever. Like there wouldn't be any beats to hit. So
Aki needs to buy the game in order to try to break it.
I want to see your experiments. I want to know what you, I want to see you.
I was just wondering because I wasn't sure if like, because you said the levels and stuff are built around the music. So I wasn't sure if like enemies were.
Yeah,
also part of that, like the more notes you had, the more enemies you got or something.
Well, the length of the song depends on the length of the level. So if you put in a 2 minute song, you're going to get a short level. If you put in a 15 minute song, you get a massive level.
I'm just going to upload one song that's been split into a whole bunch of 5 second parts. Okay.
Yeah.
So did you play 2112 in the game?
I got a guitar freak, so ST on there just have like a series of like really quick stages, like boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, like it would, we definitely could put that whole feature way more through its paces. It was more like, hey, cool, it works. And then we'll tweak it a little bit and like, we'll see what people do with it. And if they break it, that's kind of on them.
Drew Van Camp. So an SML podcast should be interesting to play.
We did cap it. We did cap it around, I think it's 15 minutes. It may be a little bit less because two things. One, there's a point where the game literally runs out of pieces to generate, and I don't remember what happens. I think it might crash. And the other thing that happens is if you put in, like, one of our buddies, you know him, Mr. Paul Good, he tried to put in, I think it was like an hour long song or something like that, and it took,
oh wow,
took 3 hours to upload, to like get the game to analyze it. And like, yeah, so I mean, we,
so there's limits.
People can try to break it, but yeah, yeah.
That's funny.
Man.
John Gage, 433 hard mode.
Yeah,
go.
Yep.
I really can't wait until someone like decides to go crazy on this. There's a song that's impossible to play on a piano. That's called I don't remember what it's exactly called, but everyone just refers to it as the world's hardest piano song. I want to see
something something E. I've seen it. It's like a meme on the internet, basically.
Yeah, I want to see someone. Yeah. Beat the game. Yeah,
it's called Rush E. That's what it's called. I remember.
Yeah. I can't wait until someone gets so good at the game they're able to beat that level.
I mean, I
watch it load that song up and it's just like super easy.
I don't even know what it would do. Like, so
it would break.
the game tries really hard to find a BPM, and so like it's not gonna do ridiculous things like, oh, suddenly there's a really hard shift in BPM and then back again. Like it's going to try to average it, kind of. It does do BPM shifts, but it's not going to be like you're drumming along to the game. Really early on, it was asked, like, are we making a game for people to have fun or are we making a drum simulator? And we decided fun is the better way to go. But there are a few songs that like you're playing it and then suddenly the BPM does lower and then messes people up, and that's great. So that's another answer. Like, God, it would be so cool to have more control over like making people kind of get crazier with having to play strange time signatures and stuff like that.
Oh, I want to mention this. Yeah, I want to mention this real quick. I didn't think about this. For anyone concerned about being good enough to play this game, there's a cool option.
That'd be me.
Yeah, so there's an option in this game. You can actually consider this accessibility, probably, but there is a setting for the metronome. It will. There is a visual metronome on screen where with the little, you know, shrinking arrows with the metronome counter. But you can, in the options, you can turn an actual audio metronome on that will click along with the music. And there's an additional option that will just turn the metronome on if you haven't hit a button in a while. So, like, when you're traveling between sections, you might not know where the beat is exactly, and the metronome will kind of kick on and cue you in. And cool, I enjoyed feature. Having that on. I'm a musical dude, but it was kind of nice to have that on. It would just sort of reset you if you stopped playing and were moving to a new place. So for
cool.
Keep that in mind if anyone out there is giving it a shot. It's a pretty nice little hidden feature.
You can even leave that on the entire time if you're really struggling. Then you hear the metronome the entire time, which, you know, takes away from the songs. But hey, if it helps.
So there's a comment in the chat about through the Fire and Flames as the final boss. And it's funny. So I had a conversation when I was discussing doing the final boss track before I sort of understood the mechanics of how the game works. And I was like, oh, do you want me to write like the most insane song like of all time? Like, is that what would work best for this? The version... Instead of Through the Fire and Flames, I was thinking of the intense singing of Hatsune Miku from Project Diva. But, you know, different strokes for different folks. They're both great.
You're right, so that works.
Yeah, and that song changes time signature like 30 times, and I adore it for it. Actually, love that song. And so I was like, oh, am I going to write rhythmically the most difficult song of all time? And the answer is kind of no, in that the level generates the difficulty, not so much the music itself. And so when I was writing the final boss, it was more so about writing the most dramatic piece of music that would work synergistically with what's going on screen, rather than writing the most complex piece of music that exists. Because that was my initial sort of thought. I was like, well, I'm just going to write Through the Fire and Flames. and I wrote something very different than that. I would have enjoyed it either way. But...
Yeah, I mean, didn't you actually... Isn't that song 120 BPM?
I did. I was like, I want Nate's animations that he makes to be exactly the way that he intended them to be. Because that's the only time you see those animations in particular.
Yep. I animate the entire game at 120 BPM, and then it will slow it down and speed it up depending on the BPM itself. So Dan knows, like... You know, he can have these like bar kind of hits, and he knows that the animation that I did can sync up to that for sure. And God, it would suck to be playing the final boss, and instead of like, it's hard enough fighting him, and then you're like, God, all these time signatures, like what the hell? Like, again, it comes back to, do we want to have a fun game or a drum simulator?
Now there is a comment in the chat about odd time signatures and stuff like that, and Grant, I'm sure, can attest to this. Both Grant and I, we actually did use a ton of odd time signatures, but we know which odd time signatures to use, and they all have to come with an ending of 4, because the game is based around quarter note metronome settings. So I have tons of sections that are in 7/4 or 6/4. It's not just 4/4. And so there is some odd time signature stuff, but it's more about being able to feel the rhythm of the game. I know that Grant's track jumps all over the place in terms of time signature, but it's not an 8 time signature. It's a 4 time signature.
You can still bob your head to it.
Exactly. You have to be able to bob your head to it. And you can do that in odd time signatures if it's a quarter note based time signature. And that was, I'm 6'9" fan. Yeah, me too. got me.
Grant mentioned many years ago, but like, one of my favorite bands for that is Animals as Leaders, because their time and signatures are bonkers, but you're headbanging to it, right? Like, you can.
Certain sections, other ones I'm like, well, I'm just lost.
For sure.
There's some swingy stuff in the game. There's like some 6/8 and some 3/4. Oh, you can there's some fucking there. You can blow people's heads off to some reggaeton shit somewhere.
Oh, hell yeah.
In the biome somewhere.
I'm always, whenever I describe this game to people, I'm like, yes, we do have metal. We also have electro swing. because you, I want you to tell me a single game that exists that has Electro Swing.
You got me.
The closest one is Cuphead, but that's not Electro Swing.
You're right. I will say for me, and this is probably just a me problem, but like a lot of times I have trouble like really nailing a good swing like more difficultly than like an 11-16 time signature. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm just too mechanical or something like that. But
we're not sexy enough. We're too. We're we are robots.
You nailed it.
We are robots.
Just too white. Yeah.
More music. Too white. Too white.
Brant bot 5000.
Caucasian bot.
Yeah. Nailed it.
Yeah.
Oh man. Well, I know we've been chatting about the game for a while. We do have to move on with the show and take care of news and reviews.
Do we?
We do, unfortunately. Nate and Dan, do you want to stick around for news, or do you guys got to get running?
I got to get running. I got to chit-chat with my lovely girlfriend and catch up about our days and drink some more seltzer.
Cool. Well, Dan, thank you so much for coming on and hanging out with us. We are going to play Discordance at the end of the show. What can people expect from the song?
So, you know, like, that meme about, like, you know, you're playing a video game and then like the choir starts chanting in Latin and you know you're in trouble.
I love when games do that.
I went kind of ham with that. So
nice.
Enjoy that.
Very accurate. Yeah.
Sweet. Well, you have yourself a great night, Dan, and thanks again for joining.
Oh, no, thank you.
Third animal.
The pleasure is mine, and I miss you, all of you.
Oh, we miss you too.
Take care, man.
All right, so we are going to move on with news. I guess, Jacob, you could talk now.
Yay.
Jacob could have been asking questions and stuff this whole time.
Yeah, he could have. Oh, well.
I mean, okay, we answered all the questions. Okay. Nate and I answered all the questions, so no one needs to even play the fucking game.
Yeah, I'm not going to play now. I gave up.
I don't ever need to play video games ever.
Yeah. Speaking of games we're not going to play, Bethesda announced that both Redfall and Starfield are being delayed to the first half of 2023.
I knew Starfield was going to be delayed. It was so obvious.
Yeah.
I didn't know the other game, but I didn't actually remember the other
game.
That
one's from Arkane.
It was brought up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So two big Xbox exclusives are disappearing until next year. So
maybe they're delaying Redfall because it needs a better name.
Maybe.
What do you think?
I like the name Redfall. It's about vampires. I think that's good for it.
Oh, if it's, well, that's a, well, it's about vampires. That's pretty good. It just sounds like it's,
yeah, it's like Left 4 Dead, but you're fighting vampires and stuff.
Oh,
so
in the Wild West.
No, it's,
oh, in, it's not Red Dead.
Well, what? I'm so lost. Oh no, I've drank too much. You can't do this to me.
She said Left 4 Dead, not Red Dead.
I thought you said Red Dead.
No, Left 4 Dead, but with vampires.
Oh, Left 4 Dead. Okay, that's different.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense then.
It has an interesting premise, but I'm looking forward to Starfield significantly more just because I've played enough Left 4 Dead clones. I'm tired of them at this point right now.
Some more news for next year. Dead Space got a release date of January 27th, 2023.
Someone announced that?
Yeah, today they announced the release date.
Day one purchase, right there.
Looks really good.
It is going to be on Series X and S, PS5, and PC, so if you still have an Xbox One or PS4, it's time to upgrade.
I'm really hoping we can get it to review, because I want to review.
Yeah, good luck.
I know we're not going to get it, but I want it so bad.
You know, Aki, it helps if you don't talk like Gollum menacingly in the background. It's like, I want that.
Wants the game. He wants it. I want the game.
I don't know. It's a horror game. I might be into that.
I feel like I'm the only person asking... was even able to tolerate the third game. That's how much I liked
Dawn of Games. Oh, dude, I loved all of the games. I thought they were all great. The only bad thing about 3 was that they wanted to make everything cost real money, so they added in a bunch of stupid mechanics. But otherwise, it was a good game. I loved those games.
And I liked that ultimately you really didn't need to use those mechanics. It was kind of just like there being annoying in the background. But
yeah.
Never touched that trash. But the game was great.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I loved it. Since it was on the 360, so there was actually modding tools for it. So you never needed to use those shitty here pay for crap things. Didn't matter.
No, I'll be honest too. I feel like to this day, like to this very day, with the exception of maybe but not quite Resident Evil 7, I can't think of another game that had the level of fear that brought the fear factor that game franchise did. Especially honestly, the first game.
That game did not scare me. None of those games scared me at all. But they were
really.
Yeah,
I don't get surprised by that.
I don't get scared by games very often. The only game so far in my life that has ever scared me was Perception. I think it's what it's called.
Now keep in mind when I say scare, I'm not straight up saying like, "Oh God, I pissed myself." I'm saying like just that level of disorientation. You're like, for example, like on the second game when you go into the school and you don't expect the game like this to have like anything related to kids in it, and those freaking zombie kids run out. You're like, "Fuck, how do I fight this shit?" Buzzsaws, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
I was kind of thrown off for a minute. Like, what do I do here? Like. It's yeah, that kind of thing.
To me, that's not fear. That's just not knowing what to do. And I never not knew what to do. What you do is
kids, I can murder them. Fuck yeah.
Exactly.
Aki's living out her fantasies in that one.
Damn straight. Like, all I went through in all those games, I just used the plasma cutter. I didn't bother with anything else. I used my powers when I had to for puzzles and shit. Otherwise, I just used plasma cutter. I was like, I know what to do. Shoot him in the face.
Like, the plasma cutter was just fantastic. And that's amazing. I can't really remember the other gun. Oh, no, sorry. There was one other gun I used to the death. And it was buzzsaw. It was a telekinetic buzzsaw that just kind of like hover. That thing was the
The Ripper gun is what you're talking about, I think.
The Ripper, yeah. And you could just like the blade hover. It's like
all the I know all the guns. I just
wanted the finger gun so bad. The pew pew.
Yeah, all of them have that. I can't wait for the new one. If they don't have that in there, I'm rioting. staple of those games at this point. They're so good.
Yeah. I feel like Resident Evil 4 came out, and it was like they were like 80% there, and then the first Dead Space. Finished, they were the other 20%, and then it did change. Like Dead Space 2 was a bit different, but I feel like Dead Space 1 kind of finished what Resident Evil 4 started, and I don't think anyone else has touched it, honestly.
I think you're right. I agree.
I don't know. It's just me.
No, I think you're
really
right.
Scary because
like 2 and 3 were good, but the first one was by far the best of the trio, and it did feel like an evolved version of RE4 at the time. So I can go with that agreement.
Well, EA just did what EA does, which is go, oh, we need to have more sales. So they just made it more action-y and more action-y. You guys know that the guys that are Sledgehammer now are, like, that's where Sledgehammer came from, right? They were the, that's Visceral games that made Dead Space.
I do kind of that.
EA basically kind of made Visceral dissolve because they pushed their games into something the players didn't want. So they left. And then they started making Call of Duties, which I was very sad about personally, but
I think everyone was sad about
I wonder how they feel about this remake, because those guys, you know, they wanted to make those games. And
EA was like, no. And now EA, it's weird.
Okay.
If you want a really scary game, go check out Perception. It's amazing. It's a little indie game. Go play it. It's amazing.
I'm going to do that. That's awesome. Layers of Fear 2 is the scariest game I've ever played.
Perception blows that out of the fucking water.
Oh, okay. Damn.
Come on.
That game up, or am I thinking about something else? Layers of Fear.
Layers of Fear is a puzzle game that has
the second one.
Horror elements to it.
It's like a walking simulator, but
nah.
There's some death is a possibility in the second one. And
Perception, you play as a blind girl in a haunted house with a ghost that wants to kill you.
She's blind.
Exactly. You use echolocation. It is so good. And it actually treats it properly. Oh, I love it. And it scared me so bad that I played like 10 minutes of it, and I still haven't gone back to it.
It's on Xbox One.
Yeah, it's amazing. Everyone should go play it.
Thank you for that one.
Yep.
Well, moving on, speaking of games that aren't on Xbox One or PS4, Gotham Knights has been scrapped for PS4 and Xbox One. It will be releasing October 25th for Series X and S, PS5, Steam, and Epic, and it's going to run $69.99.
Mm.
Jacob, what are your thoughts on this one?
I'm not pleased with the price point, and yeah, I don't
know. It looks like an interesting game, at least.
Yeah, no,
yeah, the price point sucks.
Yeah, like the $10 price hike, and then also like the multiple limited edition versions. Like,
yeah, there's a deluxe edition for $90 that's going to include some extra skins and bonuses, including from the Batman Beyond universe. And then there is a $300 collector's edition.
No, I'm not going to lie. That statue's pretty nice.
Yeah, it's a nice looking statue, but it's not. I don't think it's a $300 statue. Carnage, which Joe will buy.
Yeah, you're definitely going to buy it, Joe.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are. Don't lie. Oh,
fucking shit.
What's the statue of? Please tell me it's of Batgirl.
Of the New Guard. The four characters.
Oh, is Batgirl one of them?
I don't remember.
I think so, yeah.
Okay, then it might be worth it.
I mean, it's either Batgirl or Batwoman.
I'm good with either. Cute is cute. I'm good.
Yeah, let's see. Here, I'll show a picture to you. I'll throw it in
chat. It's all of them. It's all of them.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Like, yeah.
It's totally,
like, it's a very nice statue, and it's probably worth the money, but...
Is it all of them?
Yeah.
Oh, God, her outfit is so ugly. Oh, wow. Jesus.
Oh, no.
That is terrible looking. What
the hell? Like, I can't masturbate to this.
Oh, I still could. Don't get me wrong. Yeah, that would not be difficult.
Oh, no, I'll fit it inside me. I'll make it happen.
I don't know. The swords on that one on the left look pretty rough. I don't know how you're going to deal with those.
Just put it sideways.
Wait, is the black outfit the statue? Or the black outfits? Like, the kind of, like... covered in motor oil looking versions of these characters. What am I looking at?
I don't know what you're looking at. At the top of the page is what I...
Oh, I don't know. I'm looking at a page. This is a deluxe edition and it shows... Okay, don't even worry about it. there's two different outfits per character. There's like the colorful normal comic book ones, and then there's these sort of black...
Oh, the black ones probably look good. If only the statue was in that.
Oh, the statue's not in that.
No, it's in the colorful ones. Like, Batgirl is in this fucking super bright purple... ugly fucking outfit.
Oh, I see it.
The other characters look, you know, normal. Decent. I mean, Robin looks like Robin. Red Hood? Is that guy's name?
Yeah.
Looks normal. Like, the others look normal. She's the only one that looks bad, and that just hurts
me. I don't think she looks bad. She looks like a superhero.
That purple looks bad. Bright yellow looks terrible. She should be in black. She is
70s.
Batgirl or Batwoman. She should be in black.
I was going to say, Batwoman's in black.
So. I think both of them are.
No. The one who fucking reads comics, yes. Batwoman wears black.
Well, this is Batgirl, so.
Yeah,
she'll still be in black.
Oh, my God. Unless it's the 1997 Batman and Robin movie, she doesn't wear black.
She should. What she does and what she should might be two different things. But she should.
Oh, God. Anyway, EA Sports is ending their partnership with FIFA after 30 years. The new game will be titled EA Sports FC, and FIFA claims they'll find a new dev for the only authentic real game, whatever that means.
I mean, it's a fucking gambling simulator. I don't give a fuck. That game can go to hell.
Yeah, FIFA wanted like $1 billion, I think, per year on it. If I understood the article correctly. Well, yeah, but think of how much EA makes on it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, gambling. Yeah, they make pretty
penny. It's either $1 billion a year, or they wanted like $1 billion, like, for however many next years.
You call it a gambling simulator? Like, all of those sports games aren't gambling simulators, as well as Call of Duty and fucking Halo and like everything. WWE games, they have the same gambling Halo mechanics.
Wait, Halo has gambling mechanics?
I thought they did.
Now?
Didn't they have... oh, no, they just have the premium pass.
They have the stupid fucking battle pass bullshit.
Yeah, I hate that shit, too.
Yeah, it ain't... I don't like that.
It's not gambling, as odd as that sounds to say.
Yeah, I don't actually play sports games. The only one I specifically know of is FIFA. I didn't know any of the other ones did that bullshit.
The show has it. They have packs that you got to buy and unlock content and create your squad.
Crap. They need
it's just how sports games are now. It's how the industry's evolved.
And I still remember back in the day when DLC first became a thing, and people were like, maybe this means they'll just start letting you download the rosters instead of selling the game every year. That didn't last.
Sell the game every year. Speaking of yearly releases, 2K is shutting down the servers for WWE 2K19 and 20 on June 30th.
Wasn't one of those like a massive clusterfuck?
Yeah, 20. That was the shitty one. So no one's going to miss that one, but people are going to miss 2K19.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah.
They're making a new one, though, right?
It's already out. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
2K22.
Hopefully it's not garbage.
I heard it's pretty good.
What was the last one with the story maker in it?
Story maker?
You know what I'm talking about? Where you could like make your own. Yeah, the WWE game where you could make your own story.
Legendarily bad.
It was incredible. It was just like you could sequence together.
I mean, like. The idea was cool, but the execution was just so bad, and the all of the like glitchiness of that game was up there with the memes of Mass Effect Andromeda.
WWE.
Mass Effect Andromeda is so much better than that. Don't.
Oh no, I know. I'm just saying like the glitchiness was right up there with it.
Yeah, when it first came out, yeah.
Probably. It was terrible. Oh, it was 2K14. Create a story mode. Oh my god, you should just go watch some of the. It's insane what people made with it. It's like, it's the worst and amazing. They need to include it for irony, but
something else that could be the worst, but possibly amazing is Smite's latest crossover. Did you see this one?
Yeah.
Slipknot.
What?
Smite is crossing over with Slipknot. Three gods are going to have different playable Slipknot skins. So you could play as your favorite Slipknot member. All nine of them are in the game.
Dude,
but you got to give them credit. They somehow avoided making Slipknot a god himself.
One of our character artists works on Smite. I got to ask him about that.
Nice.
Is there like a new album coming out or something?
From Slipknot?
There's always a new album coming out.
Wait a minute. Did you say all nine are in?
Yeah.
So how many people can play in Smite? Like how many people can play at one time?
I don't know.
I don't even know how Smite works. I just think it'd be amazing if you could create some banned scenarios, right? Nine-player game with every member.
As far as I know, it's just three different gods that have the skins, and each one has three different skins that you could wear. So I don't know if you can have all nine out together. I really don't know how Smite works. I think
it's basically a third-person MOBA.
Oh, it's 5-on-5. Gotcha.
So like League of Legends-esque, but instead it's third-person.
Gosh, can more than one person pick the same character?
I don't know, but they have so many crossovers. Carnage
has the answers here.
Carnage, tell us everything.
So it's 5-on-5. So you get like all the members of Slipknot and then their manager, and then you fucking throw down. That's how it works.
I mean, they've been going for years. They have so many characters. Yeah,
their manager Leonardo the Ninja Turtle.
Right. I'd be for that. I'm just saying.
Wait. Are the Ninja Turtles in Smite? Or
pretty Slipknot sure they are.
The yeah, they are.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Oh, man. Some sales figures. Switch worldwide sales have hit 107 million units.
Good for them.
Now, my cats are freaking out.
There have been more Switches sold than Wii U games, which I thought was interesting.
That's hilarious.
Not really a surprise.
That's sad.
It was like 106 million or something.
I feel bad for them.
PS5 sales have hit 20 million units.
Cool.
Yep. Elden Ring has sold over 13 million units.
Awesome. One day I'll play that.
Yeah, you should. It's good. And then as of March, Stardew Valley has sold over 20 million units across all platforms, with 13 million alone coming from PC.
Jeez.
Yeah.
PC. Stardew Valley?
Yeah.
I'm shocked it's not more at this point, to be honest.
20 million? That's a lot.
Yeah, but hasn't that game been out for like
a long time? Yeah.
I thought like almost everyone had that game at this point.
That's still a lot. I think there was like a Story of Seasons, they said, sold 500,000 and they're happy with that. So it's not like farming games are massive sellers.
No, but that to me, that game's kind of like Minecraft. I just assume like everyone has that game except for me.
I don't have it, but I'm not really into those types of games. But I respect like that they exist and that there's a huge audience of people. It's basically like Minecraft, Animal Crossing crowd. You know?
Yeah. Like I don't even have Minecraft. So.
Oh man. Well, Aki, do you have any news?
I drank a lot today, so no.
Proud of you. Kirby 64 is going to be joining Nintendo Switch Online on May 20th. So if you have the Nintendo Switch Online expansion pack, nice. You got access to Kirby 64 soon. So they're up to what, 15 N64 games now?
Yeah, I think that's probably all that existed on that system, right?
Yeah.
I love the N64, damn it. They need to get their act together.
You quiet your face until Beetle Adventure Racing is on there and we play together online. Nintendo has not fulfilled its mission. You know this, right? This is important.
No, Nintendo needs to port the 64DD F0X car track creator to that thing. That's what they
do. Oh, that would be amazing.
Yeah, that would be something cool that Nintendo would like get fans to be into, so they're not going to do that.
And that would be good. Jacob, what news do you have?
Well, a 2001 leak of Duke Nukem Forever.
The build got
leaked. So pretty much what people are saying is that it's riddled with bugs. Most maps are utterly devoid of anything resembling gameplay. Rendering is glitchy as hell. And the sound only partially works. The game's former director at the time, said that it's just going to be small level snippets, designer tests, and some fake build out areas for the E3 demo from that year. But like, there's not a lot of guns or enemies and all that kind of stuff. So people are pretty much picking it apart right now. There's that. EA has announced that they're making a new Lord of the Rings video game.
Interesting. Did they say what kind?
Mobile.
Ah, fuck.
And it's pretty much going to be a clone of Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes. So if you like that game, which is really grindy and like essentially supported by whales, yeah. I don't know. I used to play Galaxy of Heroes. It wasn't bad, but it's not that great either, unless you want to blow tons of money on it or you have like nothing to do but play that all day. And the last bit of news that I have is that an Alan Wake TV series is going to be coming to AMC.
So glad you mentioned that. It's interesting.
I want to see that. I found some news.
Oh, what? My God.
Yeah, I just went and looked some up.
Good job.
Yep. PlayStation staff are apparently pissed off at Jim Ryan because of an email he sent out to everybody where he was telling them to be okay, that they needed to respect the differences of opinion on abortion rights, and then wrote a whole bunch of shit about his goddamn cat's birthday.
What?
Yeah.
That was certainly a sentence.
Yeah.
I don't understand anything you said. What?
Jim Ryan.
That's what happens when we let Aki report the news.
Yeah, pretty much.
He put out an email to all the people, to all his workers, telling them to respect differences of opinion on abortion rights.
That's some bullshit. Yeah, I got that.
Yeah, I agree. And then he ended it by writing a whole bunch of shit about both of his cat's first birthday parties.
Yeah, that's where I'm confused. Where the fuck did that come from?
I don't know. It's so fucking weird. I don't know why he went on with that in the same fucking email, or why he felt all of his employees needed to even fucking know about his stupid fucking cat. No offense, Joe. One cares.
No, my cats will cut you.
They probably
will.
They will. Carnage mentioning there's some rumors that apparently Codemasters and Criterion are working together on a new Need for Speed, which is depressing because I just want a new Burnout.
Hell yes. Thank you. All I want is Burnout.
I was going to say, that's not rumored. The Codemasters thing got merged with Criterion.
Oh, they got completely merged?
Yeah.
Ah, fun.
Burnout is one of my favorite racing games of all time, or franchises, I should say.
We should all get together in Burnout Paradise.
Oh my God. That would be
amazing.
Should do that.
Not
a bad idea.
One more minor news bit. Tales of Luminaria, mobile game that came out, Tales game in November, is shutting down already.
Oof.
So good job, Namco.
I was gonna say, we covered this like a few months ago when they first announced it.
Mobile games, it's a hard life.
Yeah.
Having worked in that space for a long time, you either have to constantly keep a player base up or you're dead. And like, if you even miss a month, you're dead.
Apparently, there's a name for the next Star Wars Fallen Order game. It's called Star Wars Jedi Survivor. I can't wait for that game to come out. I fucking loved Fallen Order.
It was pretty dope.
Yeah.
I really I'm really hoping that they'll make another Star Wars Squadrons.
I know you liked that one.
I know you had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah.
I got some news.
Ooh, let's hear it.
You know that Metroid Dread is the best-selling Metroid game of all time?
Really?
Real news.
That doesn't shock me.
Yep. Now, then I can be like, oh, that's because Metroid doesn't sell, because it's sold 2.9 million copies so far, which puts it higher than any other Metroid game.
Wow.
And you'd think by now, like, surely Super Metroid has sold more than that, but apparently not, even though it's the greatest game of all time.
I wonder if, like, those Virtual Console sales even are reported. You know what I mean?
Who knows? I don't know. But hey, at least that means that they'll keep it going.
I mean, they already Metroid Prime 4 is been keeping going, but yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're totally right.
I mean, like the 2D specifically, the 2D style Metroid that Mercury's just made.
Yeah, hopefully it doesn't disappear for 17 years.
Well, I have one news story.
Let's hear it, Grant.
Nate, did you finish what you had to say about Metroid? Because I will never interrupt someone talking about Metroid. some guy has been working on a Doom mod. You ever heard of Doom mods? They exist. This one is all in 3D, and they're in voxels and 3D pixels, and it's freaking incredible. It looks and plays just like Doom, but it's in complete 3D. You know how like all the enemies are sprites, and you can walk around them, and the same sprite's facing you, so it looks funny as you walk. Well, it's complete 3D. Just look up Doom voxel, and you'll see it. It looks unbelievable, like a fully 3D Doom thing. I feel like if you combine that with the ray tracing Doom mod, you might open a portal to hell straight up. but Nate's computer
won't be able to run it.
Oh yeah, right.
With those two together, that would just tear down the toughest machines on the planet.
The Doom
ray tracing thing is pretty insane. Like one of those Cacodemon shoots a fireball at you and it lights the hallway up as it comes towards you. And it's pretty terrifying. Like, I could see that would be in a scary game. But anyway, that's all I got.
Cool. Well, I guess that is the news. On that note, Purnell and Nate, we will let you two get going. Thank you both so much for coming on and hanging out.
Oh, thank you so much for asking me to do this. You know, it's been a while, Joe, and I don't always have to have stuff to promote, but I appreciate giving me a little vehicle to do so. And I hope that anybody who checks out the game enjoys it. And if you don't, we have a Discord server that you can come in and be like, here's what I don't like about the game. And we'll be like, cool. Well, hopefully we can fix those things. So we're very receptive to feedback and want people to enjoy the game.
Well, hopefully it does well. Everyone has been talking about it this week. It seems to be getting a lot of attention. So fingers crossed it does well for you guys. And Soundfall 2 comes out in the near future. Fingers crossed,
man. Yeah. All right. Cheers, guys.
Have a good one.
Later.
Purnell, any final words on your end?
Nope. This may well be the record of my quietest episode ever. Which is not a bad
thing. It's been a good chat. It's been 90 minutes so far. Good shit. Now we're going to ruin it with reviews.
Good.
Well, you can't go on tangents with guests.
Yes, you can.
Yeah, you always do.
You
are a guest. You're allowed to go on tangents. What the hell are you talking about?
Right. Good press. Wasted an opportunity. Fuck.
Well, you still have opportunities right now.
That is true. So, have you guys seen, I don't know, it's a show I started watching called Tower of God recently. It's an anime that I missed out on years
I read
ago.
It. It was fantastic.
I might need to do that because I heard the show cuts off. They have not done season 2 yet, and I'm really digging what I've seen so far. So holy cow!
And I like the fact season 2. None of the good ones do.
You ain't lying about that, man. I like the fact that this is one of those rare shows where they don't make you, they don't force an exposition down your throat, like, you don't understand what magic water is or whatever. It's just like, no, they just kind of act like everybody that's there knows what the fuck's going on, and you just kind of roll with it. And I appreciate them for that, and keeps the pacing decent. This is a good damn show. But yeah, I've been watching that, and I'm going to resolve that. And I actually had someone recently tell me today they wanted to start, they were considering starting One Piece, and I don't know what to tell them. God. I'm like, I love this show. Don't start it.
That has over, I think that has over 1,500 episodes right now, doesn't it?
Not 1,500, but honestly, the difference is negligible. I think it's up to like 1,040.
Jeez.
One day I will sit and watch that whole thing.
And it's still, they're still talking about maybe years left before it finally wraps up.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, like, I thought the author was just like, oh, yeah, I have an ending planned. And eventually, it's like 10 years away.
That's kind of where it is. It's amazing to me that that's the situation that it's in, because, I mean, the game, I mean, the show has been around, or the manga's been around since 1999. And it's amazing to me to watch the show, and at the end, the credits drop, it has 1999 Toei Animation. Like, how many other shows are toting 90s dates in their trademark information at the end? Like,
true.
Not many at this point.
Yeah, it's wild.
We're all getting old.
We really are. And maybe what? Maybe I'll die before One Piece does. That's just how long
that's been. Yeah, I remember when One Piece started, man. Shit.
Right?
So I remember when The Simpsons started. Remember that shit?
I don't know if I was alive at that point.
Tracy Ullman, bro. Starch. Up top.
But the difference
is that
The Simpsons, I feel like The Simpsons, like, as long and running as that show has, one thing I'll give difference between The Simpsons and something like One Piece, though, is the fact that The Simpsons is literally just a litany of random scenarios that take place week after week. Like, they're just like, today, Homer gets a bike. This week, today, Homer gets a triple heart bypass. I don't fucking know. but it's, they don't have to do anything consistently. In fact, they confirmed it because they freaking shifted the timeline up to keep up with the time that the show's running. But One Piece has to be a consistent narrative with a plot that people will drive back to, like, whoa, there's a contradiction there, because back in 2003, Luffy punched that guy. They said, like it has to be this lengthy-ass consistency. And without spoiling anything, they had a revelation in the last month or so that they were claiming that the author had, like, pretty much put into motion back in, like, 2005, which...
Good Lord.
In and of itself, was my fucking mind. Like, wow. That's some shit. Because normally you're like, they usually just move it. They're like, hey, we're writing it. We're still writing it. They still, my comic is still selling. So I got to come up with more story. But it really does sound like he had this thing planned out from way back then, at least the majority, the main plot lines. So it's just a wild thing that they've been able to keep it consistent like this, and it's still engaging and entertaining.
That was a good tangent. That was a solid Purnell tangent.
See, thank you guys for believing in me. You got me to change the tangent up.
You go on a tangent, Joe praises you. I go on a tangent, and he tells me to shut up.
Shut up, Aki.
Right. Hey, one time he praised me for the tangent, and it was because it was a concern that the tangent wasn't going to happen.
All right, we got to get to reviews.
Hold on. Before we do that, I just want to say, like, when we were talking about horror video games earlier, and Purnell was talking about, like, you know, the ones that he likes and all that kind of stuff, like Resident Evil 4. For a minute there, I was like, I wonder what it would have been like being Purnell's roommate. You know, it's just like 2 a.m. and you just hear, oh no, I'm scared and I pissed myself.
Oh my God. Yeah, I can honestly, back when Silent Hill 1 came out, I remember playing that on a break from college in the first floor of my house while everybody was upstairs sleeping, and I had to try to keep myself quiet while running through, like, the later half of the game. And yeah, that was really difficult to do, because I was like, "Oh fuck, shit, freaking out over," because that one, because Silent Hill 1 back in the day definitely had me on, like, pins and needles a lot of the time, especially because I played it in the right atmosphere and everything, lights off and all that.
Yep, I did that with the Resident Evil games in college as well.
And think about it, like,
Grant's like, I just want to review my game and get the fuck out of here.
No, I'm having my own survival horror thoughts about the college. It was Resident Evil 2. the first liquor made everyone spill their liquor. That's all I'll say.
It's a whole thing. It controversial point. I still feel like deep down, Resident Evil 2 is still my favorite one of the bunch, despite what Resident Evil 4 changed about it in a good way. I still like 2 the best.
I still haven't finished Resident Evil 4.
Really?
Oh, man.
Yeah, controversial. Controversial. I've finished all of them except for I didn't play 6, and I didn't finish 5, and I didn't finish 4. I couldn't handle Ashley.
Really?
I thought she was the worst. Like, there's two things I can't do in video games.
The most annoying.
It's stealth. I don't like stealth, and I don't like
escort missions.
Yes, escort. Thank you. Escort missions, and she is perhaps the like.
Leon!
Oh my god! And she was just such a piece of. She was just such a like a the perfect like. Like Japanese male envisioned, like teenager,
bimbo.
Just awful. Just it was just so offensively terrible. And she's just running into people, getting picked up, and you're shooting in the knees, and you're picking her up, and you're. It's just I just couldn't handle it. I couldn't handle it, so I didn't finish it. Which is sad.
You just beat the game, and then you unlock the ability to put her in a fucking suit of armor, and then people don't pick her the fuck up.
But you got to back up. Be like, you got to beat the game. That's the part that I couldn't do.
Yeah, you
got to
beat the game.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like maybe I was built up for it because if I remember correctly, Silent Hill The Room had come out before that game did. And Silent Hill 4 to me was probably the worst escort game until you got the freaking chain for the cattle prod rather for your companion in that game. And the worst part about that one, if you guys remember, is that the ending changed based on how badly she got beaten up throughout the run.
I have no idea what we're talking about right
Silent
now.
Silent Hill 4, he just said that.
Yeah, and it went out of my head that quick. I've never played any of the Silent Hill games.
Well, there's a couple of them playable on Xbox.
Room is the only one that plays in this manner, though. Like, Silent Hill 4, The Room, you're trapped in an apartment building the whole game, and you find holes that open up in the rooms of your apartment that lead to weird other world places that are kind of supposed to be like in Silent Hill somewhere. But the second half of the game, they changed up a bit by throwing your neighbor into it, too. And you're kind of escorting her around while you're being chased by a serial killer with freaking dual pistols. And he's just laughing at you the whole time. But basically, she takes damage, but she can't be killed. She just takes damage, and it's annoying. And at the end of the game, based on how badly she was beaten up, you get to a scenario where it's like this weird like machine that's meant to grind her up. And she's like under a spell and she's walking towards it to get herself killed. And if she's been taking a lot of damage, she'll basically start running towards it. Basically you're trying to save her, but if you let her get hurt too much, there's no way you're going to save her. She's going to pretty much like beeline for it. So it's annoying as shit because you don't know how badly it's taking place. Anyway, that's another tangent.
That is another tangent.
At least the music was good though, right? While that was happening, because Silent Hill 4 music's fantastic. So.
Yes, it was. Oh, and speaking of just random things in Silent Hill 4 that were freaky, not scary. Do you remember when you walked in that, I think it was the bathroom or something, and that woman's, your neighbor's face is just like taking up the entire back of the screen looking at you?
I don't remember. That's creepy. I saw screenshots of that.
It was creepy shit. Like, she couldn't hurt you. There was no danger. It was just the fact that it was happening was disturbing. In a weird way. Like, if you don't remember, look it up later. Just, like, look up, like, I don't know, like, Eileen, bathroom, Silent Hill 4.
Silent Hill, giant face.
This is bringing up some interesting Pornhub results.
Oh, God.
Jesus.
This is, like...
Oh, that's because I'm on Pornhub. Weird.
This is bad news. My bad. The eyes move around and shit?
Yeah, the eyes follow you around. It's freaking creepy. It is really creepy, and I never forgot it, despite
how... Oh, what the shit.
Yeah.
Oh, that is weird.
This happens all the time in my house. It's fine. Here
we
go.
We call it Tuesday here.
Oh, man. All right, I'm shutting down the tangents. We got reviews to do.
I'm trying to take a shit with
this. No, Jacob, we got reviews to do.
Catch you guys later.
Take care, Purnell.
Later, Purnell.
Bye.
All right, reviews. We got to get to these. First game to talk about tonight is called Pinball Freedom, developed and published by CGA Studio, released April 14th on the Switch for $9.99. Go back to the future with our sci-fi table or indulge in a tale as old as time with our fairy tale theme machine. With our first-person single-player simulation, you're encouraged to channel your 90s kid as you compete to make it to the top of the leaderboard with 5 uniquely themed distinct tables. Get in on the action. Grant, tell us about Pinball Freedom.
Pinball Freedom is a pinball game.
Really?
What do you rate it? Why you gave it to me?
I feel like we should play Ball Squad theme somewhere.
It's your machine, dude. If you got it somewhere, you put it on in there. You know what I was thinking about it? We're all hanging out. It's a pig pile. It's not just you and me.
Wait, here we go. There we go. Okay, I played it.
All right, sweet. That's how long it is.
Well, I have a short clip, a 4-second of just the very end of you going like, Ball Squad.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. Oh, I love it. Oh my gosh. That's OG. That's like 7-8 years ago. I have no idea.
Way too many.
I just made a few discoveries. This is like while we were in the call, I did a little research, and it turns out this game is $10 on Switch, like $9.99.
Yep.
On Steam, it's $5.99.
Hmm.
It's also on sale, 80% off on Steam for $119.
Holy shit.
So, that said, I thought it'd be fun since we're all here. I thought I would just let you. I have my notes here about this game. I played this game a bunch. Why don't you guys just ask me questions about Pinball Freedom? Just ask me questions.
What do you do in the game?
You play one of five tables. There is one called Skate Table. It says that on the back glass, Skate Table. There's one that's apparently called Chill Panda's Adventure, but it doesn't say that on the back glass. It's what it says on their website. It just says Panda. There's a sci-fi table. There is a fairy tale table, as you said, but on the back glass, it actually says Beauty and the Beast, which is amazing. They got that license. And then there's a BMX table, which stands for bicycle motocross, right? Probably.
Something like that.
BMX. And you play each of those five pinball games.
Are they good?
Not really. Not very good. The main problem with them is that they're very surface level. They spend a little time doing a bit of set dressing and kind of some design on them, but they don't really have rules that are anyone would consider deep. They have each table has a few targets, a few target banks, like a bank of three targets and another bank of three targets. One set of targets might give you a bonus. The other set of targets might give you a multi-ball. And that's it. So there's no layering. There's no ball locking. There's only one table that has multi-ball. And so that's about it. So you sort of see everything that the table has to offer in about 30 seconds, which is too bad. Yeah. Any more other questions? Yeah.
How are the physics?
Physics are fucking fantastic.
Really?
They're really good. Yeah, they're super good, which is why it's so disappointing that there are some targets that you just can't hit at all. Like there are targets that are way off to the side that no matter how you handle the ball control, you'll never hit those targets. Like it just won't happen, which is just it's just poor design. Exactly. I did a little more research. You didn't ask this, but I'm going to say this anyway. I noticed that the plunger looked awfully familiar, which I know sounds really weird, but I'm a pinball nerd. And it turns out this is basically an asset flip game made by a pinball creator asset pack for Unity that was pre-made. Because I've played with this before, and it has super good physics. They just didn't stick the landing with like the design of the tables at all. Which is kind of a bummer. Other questions?
Did anyone have anything? I thought I talked over someone before.
No, I usually mute myself during other people's reviews unless I have a question. So
that's a good idea.
No question. I think for me, it's like they didn't spend a lot of time on rules. There's no nudging at all, which if you're into pinball, nudging is kind of an important part because it's the only way to keep the ball alive.
I'm terrible at nudging.
Yeah, it's a problem, but it's having it there. Even if it's sensitive is a good thing, I think. You ever like go to the bathroom in a public bathroom where the toilet is just like strangely too close to the wall? Either, you know what I mean? Like, you're like, wow, like this room was not like the way they put this toilet in here. Like when they made this room, they didn't have it. They didn't think the toilet would be like this. You know what I mean? You feel me?
It's such a weird analogy.
Saying. If you haven't and you want to experience something like that, you can get Pinball Freedom on Steam for $119.
Well, what would you do to fix this game? What would you do to improve it?
There's a couple things. I mean, like, I think the engine is great. I think it really is just, it doesn't feel, it feels like that instead of spending time on one really, really good table, Like, they could really have, instead of going for five different tables and five different themes, I think they just sort of created the illusion of content there. And what they could have done is really spent a lot of time on one game with a more nuanced rule set and, like, really nail it. There are a couple games on Switch that do that, but I think that's what it was a matter of, like, wanting to probably get this out pretty quickly. And so to try and make it feel like more of a game, they ended up going for trying to make five tables instead of really putting their focus on one. And this is just sort of a, again, the physics are there, right? Maybe they could even make some updates to it to kind of get it there. But as it sits right now, it's definitely not worth the $10 on Switch.
So your official verdict at $10 is
pass.
Alrighty.
Definitely pass. Yeah.
That's unfortunate. How about at $1.19 on Steam?
It's $1.19. I mean, like, people don't pick up that kind of change at the gas station, you know, like, just, I mean, give it a shot. If you're a pinball guy, I think, you know, some of the tables actually kind of shoot okay. There are leaderboards, and for a game without tilt, I think it's an interesting, you know, interesting to see, like, if those can survive, like, how long the leaderboards will last if people sort of exploit them. But the game does have leaderboards. It does have a playable air hockey table.
Oh,
bonus
game.
You can walk through it. You can literally walk through it in the physical room. But you can, if you click a button on it, you can walk around the arcade and, like, walk up to the pinball machines. You can play the air hockey, though, and it does function. And there's a leaderboard for it, too. So I feel like there's some stuff in there. So $1.19 can't go wrong. Wouldn't drop 10 bones on it. There are better pinball games out there. So
cool. Works for me.
Yep.
Grant, we will let you get going. Thank you so much for coming on and joining us and hanging out with us.
Yeah.
See ya.
Been a minute.
Got to do this
more
often.
Happy
birthday. Thank you.
Get a drink.
Too early. I've been drinking a lot.
Okay, good.
I've drank two cups of what should be shots. Rattlesnakes,
oh God,
are delicious. I like rattlesnakes.
So you're going to fall asleep while Jacob does his reviews, aren't you?
She falls asleep usually anyway.
I've been nodding in and out for a while.
What's a rattlesnake?
It is Bailey's Irish Cream, Kahlua, and cream de cocoa.
Oh, wow. That's like...
It tastes like chocolate. It is so fucking good.
Wow, that does sound good.
With just a hint of cough medicine at the end, i.e. alcohol.
Wait, what? Oh, never mind.
It's delicious.
You chase it with cough medicine. Duh.
I mean, at this point, I could, but...
I should make you try the drinks I made for Onimushots at MAGFest. The one year was banana nectar and coconut rum.
I don't like coconut, but I will try that banana.
Yeah, I called it a Donkey Kong Country, and it won a shot contest.
Adorable.
And then the other one I made up is half Jaeger, half Yoo-Hoo, and top it with whipped cream, and that's a Jaeger Bomb.
Oh, that sounds delicious. I want that. Yoo-Hoos are great.
Yeah, so Yoo-Hoo and Jaeger, mix that shit up, and have fun, kids. Grant, do you have any final words before we let you go?
I put out some music recently. Feel free to check it out. I've dropped like three songs in the last month. StemmageMusic.com or Stemmage on Twitter, Stemmage on iTunes, Stemmage on Spotify, Stemmage everywhere. I've like been sitting on songs forever, and they finally had the ability to come out recently.
Just send them all to me.
I will. I got a punk track on a new movie that came out last week.
Ooh.
That has Megabeardo singing on it. It's just like a Bad Religion inspired track. I got that Soundfall track. I got a different. So it's been fun to actually put some tunes out that aren't like just for games.
I bought that Beardo song. That's a good one.
Thanks, man. So check my tunes out. And I miss you, Joe. And
miss you too, to buddy.
And great to hang with y'all tonight.
Come back soon.
I will. We'll do. Look forward kisses. To peeping the reviews. All right. Take care.
Peace.
Laters.
See ya.
All right. Next up is Research and Destroy, developed by Implausible Industries, published by Spike Chunsoft. It released April 25th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC via Steam and Windows 10 for $19.99. Also available as part of Xbox Game Pass for console and PC, Research and Destroy is a turn-based action game with simultaneous local or online co-op. Take control of three brilliant scientists as you research and develop strange new weapons and gadgets to destroy the supernatural hordes that have all but crushed humanity. So, Jacob, what's going on in Research and Destroy?
So, I'm usually not a fan of turn-based games. In fact, pretty much I'm not. In fact, pretty much the only ones I've ever enjoyed are this one and Eternal Sonata, like way, way back in the day. So Research and Destroy introduces you to a world where war never actually happens because, as the game introduces, humanity's been overrun by zombies and like creatures of the night and all that kind of stuff, pretty much because the world got stupid and stopped believing in science and education, and it's our world right now.
Yeah, like, that hits home.
Yeah. And so it introduces us to our three intrepid scientists. There's a man, a woman, and one dude in a hazmat suit. And pretty much it's just the game presents you with a map, and you have to move and shoot like whatever monsters are around, while also picking up like the research of dead scientists. So, you know, you can hopefully use it to upgrade your stuff or build new contraptions, or you're just researching like the various ghouls around on the different maps. And what I thought was really cool is that before you actually get to start a level, the game actually lets you explore the map. So you can, like, okay, I need to go here, here, and here. And then
there's some big maps in this game, too.
Oh, they're huge. Which I mean, I loved, because then I like started like looking, like investigating like all the nooks and crannies of everything just to make sure I was getting all the research money that I possibly could. And so yeah, and then so it's pretty much the game starts. You have a certain amount of time with each player to either move them, collect research, or shoot at the various monsters and stuff like that. And then it's, you know, the supernatural side. They get to do stuff, and usually that involves spawning, moving, or attacking and stuff like that. And you just keep repeating either until you've succeeded or everyone's dead. So. And then the game introduces a world map mechanic, which I thought this was pretty neat, where you can like start building, universities and doing other research, at those universities on like the monsters or contraptions and stuff like that. And that itself is also on a timer, and you pretty much just have to like have your like little van drive around, or you can have scientists explore an area, so then they could just be like, yeah, there's definitely monsters here. Or you could build, you know, certain buildings and stuff like that to get the job done. And sometimes, like, there will be invasions and stuff like that, so you have to repel them. And yeah, it's just a really neat and fascinating game. Like it's not holding you by the hand, but at the same time, it's a fairly chill game, in my opinion.
It's really cool to see a mixture of real-time, like, action third-person shooter with turn-based strategy. It's a very distinct and unique mix.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, like, for me, it's essentially fooling me into enjoying, like, the turn-based strategy genre. Kind of like how I love Mass Effect, because it's fooling me into liking an RPG. So with this, like, but what I also really loved about it was just the tone and the dialogue in the game. Now, nobody says anything, but so you have to read it all, which I was a little disappointed by, but whatever. I mean, it's a $20 game, so I can, you know, I understand.
I would have loved the voice acting for the guy and the girl, and the dude in the hazmat suit is just...
Yeah, I was expecting that, but or I was hoping for it. But yeah, like, I love the humor from the narrator, and just, you know, as I said, the dialogue and stuff like that. It's just, so all in all, it ends up being a pretty unique game. And I really dug it, especially that $20 price tag, or, you know, as you said, on Game Pass.
Beauty of Game Pass. If you're not sure if this is something you'd be interested in, could just try it.
Yeah. And honestly, it's an absolute hoot. This is a quarter two contender for me.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And it has online play.
Oh, I didn't explore that.
You should have.
Well, I usually tend to stick to single player, but I don't know if I knew.
You're a peener.
Yeah, I don't know if I knew that there was online play, but that's pretty cool. And that, you know, I'd actually look forward to like playing this with somebody. Maybe like you, Joe.
Oh, yeah, it's got two-player co-op, so yeah, you could do that. The game is $20. What's your official verdict on it?
Absolutely. This is a really fun title. I found it to be very chill. If you're not a fan of turn-based strategy, you should still give this one at least a try, because it essentially fools you into liking the genre. And it's just, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I think this is a good one to try out with the cloud gaming with Game Pass, because you don't have to bother downloading it, and it's not like it requires super Twitch mechanics. You could kind of take it at your own pace. The shooting can be kind of twitchy, but it's still something that I think you could get along playing just fine on cloud gaming. So that opens up the possibilities there. One other thing is there are some costumes for sale for the game. There are four different costume packs available. They are $3 a piece. They cover Danganronpa, AI the Somnium Files, Steins Gate, and Zero Escape. Do you think it's worth dropping $3 on any of the costume packs, or you could get all four of them for $10?
I would just buy the four pack.
Think it's worth it for the cute designs?
Yeah, why not? It livens up stuff.
Cool. All right. Well, moving on, next game to talk about is Get a Grip Chip, developed and published by Red Star Interactive, released May 12th on Xbox One. These fucking dentures, man, I'm telling you. For $9.99, help Chip save the lost battery bots on a perilous journey through the treacherous depths of a robot assembly factory. The catch? The hooks. When piloting Chip, you can't jump, but you can soar over pits of molten metal, giant crushers, pools of toxic waste, shifting saws, and high-powered lasers using your trusty head-mounted grapple. Jacob, what's going on in Get a Grip Chip?
So you're as the game description just said, you're playing this little robot guy who has this like magnet gripping thing, because you can't jump anywhere, which annoys me, but whatever. I mean, I get it. That's kind of the point of the game. Like, I think you're actually on wheels the whole time, but whatever. Anyway, so there's these little dots all over the level that you have to use your little grabber thing to grab onto and then hoist yourself up or fling yourself all over the level. And you have to, it's pretty much just make it from point A to point B. Now, the cool thing about this is that there's these little robot guys hidden all over the levels. Some of them are hidden. Some of them are just there in plain sight. And some of them are just an absolute pain in the ass to get to. But, you know, it does give you, like, a bonus at the end. Not like a bonus, but, you know, it, I guess, like, level completion and all that kind of stuff. Because you are supposed to find, I think it's 10 of them per level. So you just have to avoid, it's, like, molten lava. There was toxic waste, like, and you know, there's other environmental hazards too. Like sometimes, like the little things that you're supposed to grapple onto are these chains, and like they fall apart if you hang on to them for too long. So you know, you got to keep on moving. But at the same time, the game never really gave me a sense of urgency. So I did appreciate the fact that like sometimes you could just sit there and try to figure out what your next move was. Like, I mean, if you want to try to speed run it, you can, but at the same time, it's also a fairly chill puzzle platformer. And I just, you know, I dug it. Like, it was, it's not like it's not reinventing the genre, but it was plenty fun. I liked it.
Well, it's $10. What are your thoughts on it?
For $10, yeah, I'd recommend it.
Cool. And if you pick it up, you can actually get a bonus second game included for free. It's called Get a Grip Chip and the Body Bugs, which is a more educational take on the game.
Oh,
yes.
I didn't know about that.
Yeah, it is. You can download it on your own for free because you have Get a Grip Chip. If you want to get this individually, it's only $3.
That's cool.
Yeah,
that's really neat.
And it is a good educational platform for the chillins.
For the children's.
Yeah, for the kids.
Mostly, much like Wu-Tang.
Yes. It's
for the children.
For the children. All right, next up is Paratopic, developed by Arbitrary Metric, published by Baltoro Games, released May 13th on Xbox One and Series X and S for $5.49. You got caught smuggling VHS tapes across the border, and now there's hell to pay. You want to find an elusive rare bird in the forest and snap its picture. You have to kill a man in the back room of a shady diner. What? Jacob, make sense of this.
I wish I could. Yeah, so this is a weird, I think it gets labeled under horror, but it's not
It calls itself an experimental first-person horror game.
Yeah, and the thing is, I think there was, one moment that I was over, but it's more just creepy than anything. So what this game is that it's essentially like a bunch of scenes that may or may not actually be connected. The game doesn't really try to explain itself. And so there may be an actual underlying, story to it, but I'm not entirely sure. So, so
it's just that confusing.
It is. So on one hand, the thing is that I think it actually may be telling two separate stories at the same time, but I'm not entirely sure. So on one hand,
I'm looking at the store page and it says it tells the tale of three separate characters.
Okay. All right. That makes sense too. Okay. All right, so you have one person who got busted for smuggling VHS tapes across the border. Now, what's on the VHS tapes, I don't believe is actually said. I think it's implied to be some sort of Ring/snuff film, the video from The Ring, because essentially, if you watch it, you die. But unfortunately, there are multiple pathways through this game, and so this game will require multiple playthroughs if you want to get everything or see everything. And I know for a fact that there is one part that I didn't see because I didn't give the woman this one tape, so I don't know what happens to her. But it's implied that it's some sort of, as I said, you're told that these tapes are illegal, but then somebody goes off and watches them, and then it's he's definitely dead, and then a creature comes at you in a hallway. And then there's another person who, is just running around out in the forest, and they're trying to take photos of this red bird. And you stumble on there's a cabin with a door that doesn't open. But you have to do something later on that it will. And then
find the key?
No. So I looked up how to actually do it. There's no key. It's just you wander, you try to open it and then wander away and then come back and then it's magically open. And then there's a bigger area for you to explore. But then there's another time where you're out in the forest and there's all these random shipping containers out there and there's no road. How did all this get here? It doesn't make sense. And then later on you're exploring what looks to be this weird radio government facility kind of thing that you're not supposed to be at. And it's just, there's that. And then there are these driving portions where you just have to like drive the whole time, and you can flip around with the radio, and like sometimes it's a garbled mess, other times it's like music, other times it like you can kind of understand what the guy is saying. These parts were kind of like weird to me because like it does let you like look around the car while you're driving. And like there was one moment where I like, you know, I look at this shotgun, you know, the passenger seat, and there's nothing there. And then like, oh, you know, I'll look over again, and all of a sudden there's a pistol sitting next to me, and I'm like, what? And then so like I look again, there's nothing. And then I look again, and then now there's like a VHS tape box there. And it's like, what? Like, because at first I was like, am I too baked? Like, am I imagining this? Like, and then I realized like, no, like this game's definitely fucking with me. Yeah. And then it's just like, you also have conversations with like some guy in like a Minute Mart of like a town that like it, like, you know, nothing happens in it. And there's like museums to check out. And like, you, I don't know, like it's a lot of weird, seemingly unconnected events, and I don't know exactly how to describe it, but at the same time it also looks like it was made in 1998.
Yeah, it's got a very PS1 look to it.
Yeah, which I really dug. I don't really know what to make of this game. I've really enjoyed what I played. I don't understand the story, and I like, it's definitely like there's more to it than it's letting on, and I want more of it.
Well, it is just under $6. What do you think?
Absolutely. Like, I friggin' loved it. Like, it, yeah, it was a genuinely weird experience. And as I said, I want more games like this.
Cool. Works for me. You got one last game to talk about. That is called Chefy Chef, developed by Bug Studio, published by Ravnica Games, released May 6th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $4.99. Pineapple radish salad is a favorite dish of the chef named Chefy. Once again approaching the refrigerator, Chefy magically finds himself in new worlds in which he has to find the ingredients for his favorite dish. Jacob, what's going on in Chefy Chef?
Okay, I'm glad you actually read that thing to me, because like all the times I've been playing this game, I've been like, why the fuck am I collecting milk, a pineapple, and like what looked, I thought it was a turnip. But like, I'm just like, what the fuck is this guy making? Like,
pineapple radish salad.
Yeah, right. So yeah, so you play this chef who gets sucked into this like alternate dimension by this like magic fridge. It's like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, except with a fridge. There's only you and none of the excitement or fun of the movie. And you pretty much just go through these levels, and the game tries, like, you know, oh, this is how you do this. Like it tries walking, like, you know, holding you by the hand at first, but it doesn't really, because it doesn't actually, like, the game doesn't actually explain itself. And so, like, you see a frog, and like, if you go through the achievements, you know you have to kill a frog at some point. And so you're like, oh, well, this is like, this must be like a standard platformer thing. And so you bounce on its head, and it takes away your life, and you're like, shit, like, wait, like, did that actually happen? Did I do it wrong? Like, maybe I didn't jump enough. So you do it again, then you're like, oh fuck, okay, no, this game doesn't, like, this game has a certain set of rules, and it's also not going to tell you how they work. And so, yeah, and so at first it's a lot of dodging, and like you have to like dodge, like you have to jump over pits of spikes, or sometimes they're on the wall and stuff like that, and you have to go around and gather the ingredients. And also there are secret burgers hidden on the level, which, you know, are usually like, once you uncover it, it then floats away to a different part of the screen. And usually it's a very like difficult area to get into. In later levels, they introduce weapons, which finally allow you to kill like the different creatures on the levels. But then once you finish that level, your item disappears for whatever reason. And again, the game doesn't tell you like that this is happening. And at first I thought this was like a glitch because I had like thrown the knife right before I had left the level. And I was like, oh shit. Like, did I glitch it out or something like that? And now I just don't have it because like I left the level before it came back to me. And it's like, no, you just lose all your shit every single time. You know, you start up a new level and then you have to go off and find a new knife or a new skillet and stuff like that. And like, it's not bad. Like, I mean, it's definitely not bad. I mean, it's competently made. And once you understand
fun with this one, I really enjoyed it.
Let me finish. Once you understand the rules of the game and like how it sets out to play, like, yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was all right. I would have appreciated some more variety to like the levels and stuff like that, but yeah, I mean, it's all right.
I had fun with this one. I thought the platforming was pretty good. Each of the levels had like a mini Metroidvania feel to it. As I guess some people would have issues with the backtracking involved, because you're kind of like running from one corner of the map down to the other one, back to the other corner to collect what you couldn't get the first time because you didn't have the knife. And then you go back to where the thing is to go to the fridge. And it could be seen as a lot of backtracking, but I didn't really mind it. I had fun with it. I thought,
as I said, I didn't either once I understood like what the game was setting out to do, but I really wish that like when you get the knife for the first time, it's just like, hey, by the way, you lose this at the end of each level. Like, you know, or like, I don't know, you know, like the game is just like, hey, this isn't like, you know, Super Mario Brothers. You can't just hop on a frog and kill it, like, for whatever reason. I don't know. Like, I just wish that there was like some stuff like that. Like, it explained itself a little bit more. But otherwise, yeah, I thought it was fun. Like, I mean, it's not going to set, you know, the indie platformer Metroidvania world on fire, but I thought it was fun for what it is.
Well, $5. What's your verdict?
Yeah, I'd recommend it for $5.
Cool. Like,
it's not a bad game. It's, as I said, it needs to explain itself more, but otherwise I liked it.
I don't think it needs to explain anything. It's a fucking platformer.
You
take Screw one hit Joe. And you figure it out. Oh, I can't jump on enemies.
Actually, it took me 2 hits.
Oh, you puss. All right, do you have any final words before we let you go?
Nah, I'll let Aki off the hook this week.
Aki, anything?
Huh? What?
Oh, all right, next game to talk about is Source of Madness, developed by Carrie Castle, published by Thunderful, released May 11th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $19.99. Source of Madness is a side-scrolling, dark action roguelite set in a twisted, Lovecraftian-inspired world powered by procedural generation and AI machine learning. Take on the role of a new acolyte as they embark on a nightmarish odyssey. Aki, what is happening in Source of Madness?
This game is a clusterfuck. You play as a guy every run. You pick a different character to play as, because when you end a run, your character has fucking died, is the nicest way I can put that. And you start off at the beginning again, and you pick a new character. You can get upgrades that pick between more and more number of people. But they're only in classes that you've unlocked. And you unlock those by finding like a grave in the game. But once you pick your character, you head outside. They also have 2 rings equipped to them, which tell you what special ability they have. And you kill Cthulhu monsters, basically. And it's a clusterfuck. The Cthulhu monsters, they break apart. Eventually, if you keep hitting the same area on the monster's body, it'll break off, and then it's just there in the way, so you can't see anything. And some of them have a lot of health bar, so a lot of pieces get broken off. So it's really hard sometimes to see what is and is not an enemy. And then because they're Cthulhu monsters, they're made of fucked up. That's all they're made out of, is fucked up. So, you know, it might have like a tentacle in the front. I don't know what I was about to say.
Tankle?
Yeah.
You might have to tankle.
It might have a tentacle in front. It might have, you know, some leg-like things, but don't have any feet that snap together and wiggle around. Like, they're made out of what children would describe as nightmares. I just think they look silly. But it's like a mixed bag of just random chunks of different things attached to the body. And so you never know what's going to hit you or try to hit you. Things have sometimes glow when they go to attack you and you're supposed to avoid the glow. I've never figured out how to manage that because it glows for a while sometimes. Other times it doesn't glow for very long. And it's like, I don't know. Combat, it's really hectic because often it's not one-on-one fights. You know, you might have three or four or five of these things show up and come and try and wreck your shit. And then with all the pieces of them all over the place and stuff, it gets very hard to tell what you're trying to do anymore.
Yeah, I'm looking at screenshots for the game and there's a lot of them. It's just very hard to understand what's going on.
Yeah, and it doesn't help that the environment itself is fucked up too. And it looks a lot like the goddamn creatures. So I've lost sight of the creatures numerous times and they've kept attacking me, but I don't know where they actually are. And it's really easy to get your character killed. You level up your gear and by actually getting money in the game. And then there's a store in every level or more. Some levels only have one. Sometimes you might be lucky and you have a few because it's all randomly generated. But I think they always give you at least one. But you can sell the garbage that you find, which is a lot, and pick up hopefully some upgrades to decent rings. And the rings you want are the ones where you can just hold down the trigger buttons and never take your fingers off of them. And they just auto-fire forever. Because otherwise, the game gets way too difficult. It's better when you just have the ability that just goes pew, 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 pew constantly forever. But you can upgrade your hood, because yes, your character wears a hood, because they're a cult member, and therefore they have to look stupid. And all the hoods have different abilities. They almost always give you some extra life. But then they might also be like, oh, you have your powers cool down 5% faster, or oh, you do more of this type of damage, be it like nature damage or fire damage or what the fuck ever. Or it's like, oh, you have more resistance to this type of damage, whatever. Whereas the rings are just, you know, your ability that you can use. Each ring is tied to a trigger button. You get some other things that help augment your strengths, little crystals that you can almost always buy. It's hard to find those actually dropping anywhere. And a couple like turrety things that are just extra powers that you can equip that go to the bumpers. Sometimes they're like, oh, you get a flame shield, so anything attacks you gets set on fire, because fuck them. Or, hey, you can set down basically an immovable turret, which kind of sucks. I've not really found those powers to be particularly useful. But through this, you can also, you know, as I said, how you can upgrade and it allows you to pick from different characters. There's an entire upgrade tree, and every enemy you die gives you blood. And when you die, that blood is kept. Your coins are not, nor is any of the equipment you had, but the blood is kept, and that blood is used to go through the two different trees. It takes forever to get anywhere in any of them. I'm not even through a quarter of either tree.
Wow.
Because it requires obscene amounts of blood. Like the next upgrade to get another health flask, which you start off with none, which sucks ass. But to get my third and final health flask is like 36,600 blood or something.
Jeez.
I get 300 to around 1,000-ish a playthrough.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
just one.
A lot of grinding.
Yeah, this all... And there's an achievement for having every ability.
Of course there is.
In the tree. And that's just one. That's not to get to the third. No, that's just to buy just the third one. And there's three of them before it, because you get a half of one, you get one, and then you get two, and then you get the third. And it's like, holy fuck. And that's not even the only type of blood you get. You also, there's boss monsters in here. Usually there's one in between you and the very end of the level. Sometimes they put in two or three because they really want to say fuck you and let you die before you can even get to the second section of the first act. There's like four acts. I've never finished a single one. And when you kill those, you get a special blue blood thing. Only one per each one you kill. And the cheapest item you can buy on there is 15 of those, I think. And there's a bunch of those that cost like 50 or so. So again, a fuck ton of grinding. That's all this game is. It's grind, 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 grind. And sadly, it stops being fun because of that. Because it's like, it wants a little too much grinding. Like, I can understand some of the end tier stuff being somewhat grindy. I think 36,000 blood is a bit much, especially to get health refills that you fucking need to get anywhere, because I've still not finished the first fucking act.
Oh, shit.
And that is, the third one is the last one you fucking get, and I still cannot get through the first fucking act.
Jeez. Well, the game's sitting at $20. What are your thoughts on it?
I have to pass on this one. I think people who like really grindy, super hard games, they might like it. But for 90% of the people out there or more, you're not. This isn't going to be fun for you. It's too much grinding, and it's just unnecessarily difficult, in my opinion.
All right, so some rebalancing, and it could be a good one, but as it stands, it's got to wait.
Yeah. Yeah, it needs a lot of rebalancing to remove a lot of that grind. Jesus.
Ah, well. All right, well, we got one final game to talk about tonight. That is Zombie Army 4 Dead War Ragnarok Parts 1 and 2, developed by Flix Interactive and Rebellion, published by Rebellion, released May 5th for Zombie Army 4 for $9.99. Available with three new characters and hats for $14.99 in a bundle. Woohoo! The nightmare is almost over. Hitler's hell cult has been torn apart along with the occult mastermind behind it. Yet the few surviving cultists have retreated deep into hell and have put into motion the mysterious Project Ragnarok. Aki, what's going on here?
Okay, first I'll start with the three costumes. One is Future Carl, and he has like robotic limb and a robotic eye and stuff, and it looks really fucking cool. Then you get a investigator outfit for, I believe his name is Billy. He's the black guy. He's a sailor of some sort, but he gets an investigator outfit, which looks really good on him. And then you have one for Marie, I think is her name, and she, I believe, is an Italian spy. And it's old-style lounge singer wear, which surprisingly doesn't look that good, sadly.
you got the second guy's name wrong. It's Josiah.
Josiah. Yeah, I couldn't remember any of their names at all. I remember Carl and June.
That's why Carl, I have the store pages open.
That is a good idea. Carl's the main character in all the Sniper Elite games, and June is the character I play as, so those are the ones I know. But those are the three outfits you get. They're just extra skins. There's nothing particularly amazing about any of them. I still play it as June because June's cute. And then the actual levels are the two Ragnarok levels in which you go to hell purposely. You send yourself straight to hell. You're working with Schneider? I think that's his name.
Schweiger.
Schweiger. Gosh, Schweiger. That was close. Schweiger. Yes. who has been in hell. He is actually a resident of hell at this point, through other parts in the main story and DLC. You deal with him a whole bunch in hell, because that's where his ass is stuck, because he's a fucking idiot. And you guys are basically ending the Nazi regime fucking finally, because they've all decided, all the Nazi people have decided to go to hell to set up some sort of special weapon to kill everyone. And so you go to hell to stop them.
Yeah, if they had that weapon, why didn't they just do that in the first place?
They were still figuring stuff out, trying to make it.
Excuses. Fucking villains.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, Nazis aren't particularly useful.
and that holds true today.
Yep. The one cool thing they do in this is...
you said you get doo-doo.
Yep, you get the doo-doo. Is you get to fight a fucking giant shark. As a... I guess it's like a kind of like a boss fight. It's so fucking fun.
Is it like My Zombie Shark?
Yes, except for it's bigger. It is so fucking cool. That fight is all sorts of awesome.
I love this statue. I love this fucking thing.
I love my plushie, so it's all good. Even though it's a stuffed animal and not really a plushie, because it's too big to be a plushie, but I don't care.
You called it a plushie.
No, I didn't. You didn't hear that. But you're there to destroy a factory that's in hell where they're actually making all the big elite enemies that you fight throughout the game, like the heavy gunner, the flamethrower, the butcher. You actually go to the factory that's destroy that place so they can't make any more of them fuckers. And then you chase after the heads to go kill them. So, yay, put down all the Nazis. They're gone. Woohoo! Yay! And then they set up fucking sequel bait.
Really? I thought this was the end.
Yep, they put up fucking sequel bait at the end, and I am not happy.
Son of a bitch!
I don't know if there's going to be any more in this game, but it might be them setting shit up for
Zombie Army 5.
Zombie Army, yeah, they might be making another Zombie Army game. But they definitely, the end of this sets up a fucking sequel.
I thought we were finally getting the end of this, and you're nope.
I know, bait. Right? I just like in the Sniper Elite games, I just want to kill Hitler and be done with the fucking war finally. I just want to see the end of this. And they both these games are just like, how about no? How's that sound? Fuckers.
Ah, well, it's $10 for the bundle, or $10 for the two stages, and $15 for the bundle with the skins. What do you think of everything?
If you really like the skins that you've seen so far, I say go for $15. I think it's decently worth it. If you don't really like the skins, I think the DLCs are really well done. They're not a whole bunch of, here, now you get to sit here and wait for like 10, 20 minutes killing a horde of fucking zombies that are just going to keep coming and coming and coming until that time's over. Yay, no more of that shit. Thank fuck. I hated that. that was my complaint about a whole bunch of the other ones prior to this. They got rid of that finally, and I'm so stoked about that. The two levels that they give you are really well done.
Nice.
So, yeah, I'm for it.
Cool. All right, well, that is it for this episode. Made it through another one. This was a long one. Big thanks to Purnell for coming on and hanging out with us as we chatted with Nate Horsefall, Dan Behrens, and Grant Henry.
Yeah.
Go check out Soundfall. The game is out now. I can't wait to get my hands on it. It looks so fucking cool. It just, I want to play it. I want to play this game. We're going to end the show with Discordance from Danimal. So Aki, do you have any final words to end it?
Happy birthday to me, motherfuckers.
Yeah. Happy birthday, Aki. And Carnage. His is tomorrow.
Yes. Happy early birthday.
I like that yours are like day right before each other.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure my stepdad's is the day after Scotty's. It's either one day or it's 3 days. I don't remember exactly. Like, me, my grandfather, and my stepfather all have birthdays within the same month. I think my grandfather's is on the 4th, and I think my stepfather's is either on the 6th 13th or 14th. Hmm. So, yeah. I honestly didn't even realize this week was my birthday until earlier this week when my mom told me it was.
How do you not know?
Because I don't keep track of the date.
No, that's fair.
And my birthday isn't particularly important to me because most of y'all had birthday parties growing up. I didn't. Mm-hmm. I would go out to eat with my family maybe, and that was it. I didn't have friends growing up, so I didn't have any big parties. So my birthday was just kind of like, okay, whatever. I get some good food. I'm good.
Well, instead you're going to get some good music. So Danimal, take it away. Mm-hmm.